Today is Tuesday, January 18, 2022. We are in a new year. It's right at 9:30, and I would like to call this meeting of the Tahoe Regional Planning Agency's Advisory Planning Commission to order. APC members, you can go ahead and turn your cameras on if you so desire. We do have bandwidth to do that now. Thank you all for joining us in these trying COVID-19 times. I hope everyone's doing as good as they can. And the first item on our agenda is the roll call to determine our quorum. Tracy, could you please help me with that?
Mr. Oling?
Present.
Mr. Booth? Ms. Carr?
I'm here, thank you.
Ms. Chandler?
I'm here, thank you.
Mr. Drake? Mr. Drew?
Good morning.
Mr. Ferry?
Good morning.
Ms. Ferris?
Good morning.
Mr. Gavon? Mr. Hill? Ms. Jacobson?
Good morning.
Mr. Letton? Ms. Roverud?
I am here, thank you.
Ms. Simon?
Here.
Ms. Stala?
Here.
Mr. Teixeira?
Good morning.
Mr. Smokey? And Mr. Young?
Can I just confirm with Mr. Marshall, we have 11 members present. Does that constitute a quorum for us this morning?
Yes, it does. I think we have a Lahontan rep as well, who, for at least for this portion, we should have a roll call for Scott. And then he'll have to recuse for the keys item, but that puts us over the top.
Mr. Marshall, this is Scott Ferguson with the Lahontan Water Board. I was just planning on discussing, sharing a few statements regarding the Tahoe Keys Property Owners Association agenda item. I was not anticipating representing the Water Board on APC for this meeting.
Okay, then. That still gives us, by my count, 11. So I think we're okay to go.
Correct. Mr. Chair, we have a quorum.
Okay. Thank you, Tracy, and thank you all. I will now go over the meeting rules for the day. To observe the meeting, go to trpa.gov. Under the calendar header, click on Advisory Planning Commission meeting for January 18, 2022. There you'll find a link to the public webinar hosted on GoToWebinar. To address APC members directly with your comments, please utilize the hand-raising function in the control panel of the GoToWebinar, which you should see under the red microphone. At the appropriate time for public comments, please raise your hand by clicking on the hand icon, and a TRPA staff member will unmute you, and you can begin your public comment. Please state your name at the beginning of your comment. If you requested a reasonable accommodation from TRPA and have been provided a unique PIN number for dial-in, you'll be unmuted at the time you requested to make your public comment. If you are using GoToWebinar's Instant Join web app, please make sure it is opened in the Google Chrome browser and that you allow access to your microphone in order to be unmuted. Finally, if you have called into the general attendee line with the access code posted on the website, Please be aware that this is a listen-only option. To my fellow APC members, if you wish to speak, you can alert me via the chat function or speak up when someone else is not speaking. APC members may only use the chat function to indicate a desire to speak. This function must not be used to have sidebar conversations. Please, everyone, remember to mute your microphones unless speaking to cut down on background noise. And finally, I'll just remind everyone, APC members, we do now have sufficient capacity on our platform, and you may turn your cameras on to join us. Okay, I'm going to move on to item 2, which is approval of the agenda today. Staff, are there any changes to the agenda?
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. There are no changes to the agenda.
Thank you, Mr. Hester. Appreciate that. I will go ahead and deem the agenda approved as posted for the record. I'll move us now on to item 3, which is public interest comments. If any member of the public wishes to address the Advisory Planning Commission, please use the hand-raising function now, and you'll be unmuted by a TRPA staff member. All public comments should be as brief and concise as possible so that all who wish to participate may do so. I do have the discretion to set appropriate time allotments for individual speakers. No extra time for participants will be permitted by ceding the time of others. Written comments received prior to the meeting were forwarded to the APC members. Pardon me, my phone is ringing. In the interest of efficient meeting management, I do reserve the right to limit the duration of each public comment period to a total of 1 hour. Any unheard comments can be submitted via email to tcampbell@trpa.gov, and they will be forwarded to all APC members. Please note the Advisory Planning Commission is prohibited by law from taking immediate action on or discussing issues raised by the public that are not listed on the agenda. I will now turn this over to Catherine to manage muting and unmuting members of the public with raised hands.
Mr. Chair, there are no hands raised to make a comment on this item.
Okay, thank you, Catherine. I'll move us now to item 4, which is disposition of minutes. We do have a set of minutes from our December 8th, 2020-21 meeting in our packets. It's on page 7. Are there any questions or comments from APC members on the minutes? Steve.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good morning, everyone. Happy New Year. Just a couple quick comments on page 12, last full paragraph at the bottom of the page, the city of South Lake Tahoe, not Salt. And on page 14, in the paragraph that starts in bringing it all together, it says creating a separate bucket and separate, I think there's a missing word there, maybe plan, separate plan that sits on a shelf. So these are minor, but I think important. And just as a general observation, there's some parts of this where the attribution of somebody doing something or creating something is not clear. So I don't feel the need to make any specific comments on that, just to make a general observation that attribution is important in these. And as an example, I would cite page 16, this second paragraph to the bottom, where Mr. Gabon is talking about they are pushing ahead with their proposed fire helicopter program. The attribution would be Tahoe Douglas Fire Protection District. So it's just the general comment in producing the minutes. The attribution of things or people is extremely important for the record, in my view. So, but with the two changes I mentioned, I would, unless any of my colleagues have additional comments, which they may, allow people to do that, and then I'd be prepared to make a motion to approve as amended.
Thank you, Steve. Appreciate that. Other APC member comments?
Hearing none, Mr. Chair, I'll make a motion to approve the minutes of our December 8th meeting. with the two changes that I made as amended.
Thank you, Steve. Anyone care to second that motion?
I'll second that, Jennifer.
Thanks, Jennifer. We do not need a roll call, but could all those in favor please say aye? Aye.
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 Any suggestions?
Brendan, this is Ellery. I'll abstain.
Thank you, Ellery. Any other?
Yes, Mr. Chair, this is Garth. I'd like to abstain as well due to my absence. Thank you.
Thank you, Garth. Okay, all affirmative except we have Ms. Stoller and Mr. Alling abstaining. Great. Thank you all, and thank you, Tracy, for producing the great minutes. We really appreciate that. I'm going to move us now into the meat of our agenda. Let's go to item 5, which is planning matters. Item 5A is for discussion and possible action on the Tourist Core Area Plan Amendment. Artisan small-scale manufacturing and industrial use in the Gateway District. Information on this item can be found on page 31 of your packet. And I'm going to pass this over to Jen Self with TRPA to present on this item. Good morning, Jen.
Good morning. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, we can.
Wonderful. Well, good morning, Brendan and members of the commission. I am Jennifer Self, Principal Planner at TRPA. I'm also joined by John Hitchcock, the Planning Manager with the City of South Lake Tahoe. John, if you could just confirm that you're on this morning.
I am.
Wonderful. Thank you. So I will give a little bit of a context for this agenda item, and then I'm going to turn it over to John. He will provide a presentation explaining what the amendments are and going into a little bit more detail. We do realize that there's a few important items on your agenda for today, so we'll do our best to be time sensitive and to be as succinct as possible. So John and I are here today seeking your recommendation to the TRPA Governing Board to adopt amendments to the Tourist Core Area Plan as provided in your packet and we'll discuss today. In order to make this recommendation, there will be two proposed motions that will require action on your part, and we'll present that at the end of the presentation. So for that little bit of context I mentioned, the City of South Lake Tahoe and TRPA adopted the Tourist Core Area Plan, or commonly referred to as the TCAP, back in 2013. The TCAP runs through the city's major tourist corridor along Highway 50 from the Bijou Marketplace, which is essentially across from the Safeway grocery store in the middle of town, and continues along Highway 50 to the Casino Core. It also runs up Ski Run Boulevard. This area includes a mix of primarily commercial, retail, and tourist uses, which are catered to both the local residents and visitors. Procedurally, area plans and area plan amendments are first adopted by the local jurisdiction, and then they are adopted by the TRPA Governing Board. Upon TRPA approval and adoption of the area plan, the plan will become a component of the Lake Tahoe Regional Plan. So in bringing these amendments forward, we must demonstrate that the local plan is in keeping with the regional plan. And TRPA staff also has annual reviews with the local jurisdictions to ensure that these local plans are meeting the goals and policies that are set forth within those. So in the development of this and other local plans, local jurisdictions engage with TRPA staff early and often throughout the planning process. And that's certainly been the case with these amendments. We've been working closely with John Hitchcock and others at the city. The City Planning Commission and the City Council have reviewed and approved these amendments that are before you today. The City Council adopted the amendments on November 16th, and then the TRPA Regional Plan Implementation Committee, RPIC, received the same presentation that you'll hear today last month in December, and they unanimously recommended approval to the Governing Board on December 15th. So if APC today recommends adoption, our staff anticipates that the amendments will come forward for final consideration to the TRPA Governing Board later this month. So there's the little bit of context and just procedures on our end. I'm now going to turn it over to John Hitchcock at the city, and he'll go over what these amendments are. John, take it away.
Thank you, Jennifer. Good morning. Good morning, Chairman Ferry and members of the commission. For the record, John Hitchcock, manager, planning manager of City of South Lake Tahoe. Item before you today is a proposed amendment to the tourist court area plan. Next slide, please. Here's a location map showing the actual amendment. The proposed amendment is applicable to tourist court area plan Gateway District Special Area Number 1. This is the area that's just north of the Safeway and runs westward to and ends at Lakeland Village. Next slide, please. As Jennifer mentioned, the tourist corridor plan was adopted by TRP and the city in 2013. It provides land use guidance for the whole area plan as well specifically to the Gateway District. The area plan itself vision is to provide attractive mixed-use commercial and tourist accommodation corridor that provides a welcome gateway to the tourist core. Currently, the district provides an array of uses, including tourist accommodation, residential, commercial, retail, restaurants, and recreation uses. Currently, right now, the district has a mix of tourist accommodation, commercial, retail, restaurant, and recreation uses that caters to locals as well as visitors. Next slide, please. To continue to promote the expansion of tourist-related uses, Tahoe Wellness Center submitted an application to the City of Tahoe to amend the tourist core area plan to add small-scale manufacturing, industrial services, and wholesale distribution as part of a retail commercial use. The amendment itself would continue to set implementation of TCAP objectives to develop and redevelop a wide range of tourist-related uses to enhance the user experience in the tourist core. The intent of this amendment is to allow the production and manufacturing of goods for on-site sale as well as off-site retail sales as it relates to retail uses. The best way to think about this is it's very similar to the whole farm-to-fork movement. There's currently a trend in the retail business where people are interested in the user retail experience, not simply just buying a product from a retail use, but they're interested in knowing how the products are manufactured, how they're produced, where they come from for sale on site. The amendment itself would amend the definition of industrial services as well as wholesale distribution, and it would be specific to tied to a retail use. Next slide, please. Just to give you an example of what we're kind of envisioning here are type of business we're thinking that could take advantage of this amendment are like confectionery shops, leather goods, metalworking businesses, woodworking, handcrafted goods, chocolatiers, and coffee shops, where they would actually produce those, would produce these items on site and would have them on sales retail uses, as well as also be able to sell it offsite as part of wholesale distribution. The example I'm showing here, this is a chocolatier shop that we found in New York City where they sell chocolates made on site. They sell it on site, but then they also have demonstration chocolate making where people can actually see how the products are made on site. And so we think this is a very interesting concept that would expand potential retail uses in the tourist core for visitors and locals and make the tourist core area plan a more interesting place to visit. Next slide. Proposed amendment itself would have to be connected to primary retail commercial use. So it's not possible to create a wholesale or industrial primary use. It has to be tied to a retail use, because generally those type of uses are only found in industrial areas. It would be limited 30% of the primary retail space. We also require a special use permit required from the city as well as TRPA, just to ensure that whatever use is proposed as part of any retail use in terms of manufacturing, wholesale distribution is desirable in its proposed location, and all potential project impacts have been adequately addressed. And then to also note, there are no changes to design and development standards. The current development standards of tourist core area plan would apply to any project in the future. Next slide. And in summary, the proposed amendment is facilitate implementation of the Tourist Core Air Plan objectives, encourage tourist-related retail commercial use on-site, as well as production of uses on-site, and facilitate opportunities to enhance retail experience through demonstration and education opportunities as part of any retail expansion. And that concludes my presentation, and I can answer any questions that the Advisor Plan Commissioners may have. Thank you.
Thanks, John and Jennifer, for the concise yet informative presentation. Let me go to APC members. Please go ahead, unmute yourself, and feel free to speak up with comments or questions for John or Jennifer.
Good morning, this is Jennifer Carr. Thank you for that little overview. I do have a question about the map. You noted that it's the special area number one was the light blue area associated with that. But the map in our packet shows another special area number one on the southeast end of the Tourist Core Area Plan up Ski Run Boulevard. Was that identified as special area one in error? Because it's right in with residential. It looks a lot different from the overall setting of the portion down by the lake.
The amendment itself would apply to the special area that is north of Safeway. There is another special area number one that is located at the end of Ski Run. I think that's one you're referring to. This amendment would not apply there.
Okay, thank you. That resolves some of my questions and concerns about potential, businesses like so close to that residential area off of Ski Run. So.
Yeah, that special area off Residence Ski Run was originally amended to facilitate the development of the Pacific Development Group affordable housing project. Mm-hmm. And this particular amendment does not apply in that district.
Okay, thanks. Yeah, I kind of remember when that little piece was added. The things I was thinking of as I was reviewing this, I'm sure it will be mitigated at the project level, which is not what we're talking about here today, but you use coffee roasting as an example or coffee shop as an example. You know, I live pretty much, within a quarter mile or so of the Starbucks plant down here in the valley. And while coffee smells wonderful, when the entire neighborhood smells like coffee, it's not always so great. So I assume things like odors, potential noise, potential parking issues, all those would be addressed and potentially mitigated at the project level when actual redevelopment and special use permits come through the city.
That's correct, Commissioner Carr. We specifically made it a special use so that we would have to make those special use findings. And so any potential impacts such as odor, parking, noise would have to be mitigated to a less than significant level. And also the special use findings would require the city to make the specific finding that the use is desirable in that location would not be injurious to the neighborhood.
All right, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks, Jennifer. That was a good comment. I noticed that too on page 34, that map. You know, I guess I question why it wasn't special area number two. I don't know if that makes sense, or we just don't want to lead to any confusion about what is allowed in special area one. I don't know if that warrants further discussion or if you feel comfortable with it, John, but I did notice that as well.
This is John Marshall. I think John Hitchcock, but just very quickly, I think we can take a look at that to make certain it's clear before we go to the governing board with this item, to make certain that, you know, if we need to create another special area too, we can make sure that we're not somehow there's some confusion as to which area of special area one these amendments apply to.
Okay. Thank you, John. Marshall. Let's go to other APC members.
Yes, this is Sue Chandler. Just a quick question. I'm wondering about the source of this proposal. Was it only from the Wellness Center, or is there a consortium of businesses that are also interested in perhaps taking advantage of this change of plan? Thank you.
Thank you for that question, Commissioner Chandler. The source of the amendment itself was the Tahoe Wellness Center. Other retail uses were not part of this amendment, but we're hoping that once this amendment occurs, that other retail uses in the area would take the opportunity to potentially look at maybe expanding their retail uses to include these educational and opportunities to create on-site manufacturing as part of their retail experience.
Okay, and then maybe a follow-up to that. As we all know that live up here, the Bijou Center is the one area in town that is due for probably major renovation. It's left over from, I don't know what year, but, you know, if you go by it, you don't think that this is going to be a good place for contemporary innovation and innovative businesses. So is that also in the works, that there will be an upgrading of that center?
Well, we haven't heard anything from the property owners yet, but we definitely would encourage redevelopment of the Bijou Center. Just to keep in mind, the Bijou Center, where CBS is housed right now, is a designated historic resource, but that's something we'd work through as part of any planning process. But I think the concept we're trying to do here is create flexibility in the system so that we can get property owners to redevelop some of these older sites that need BMPs, need improvements as part of redevelopment efforts.
Thank you. Good answer. Appreciate it.
Mr. Chairman?
Steve, yes.
Thank you. Mr. Hitchcock, I recall, because I did follow this process through the City Planning Commission and the City Council, I seem to recall that Nick Exline advocated for these amendments that we're discussing today on behalf of at least one client of his, and I don't think that client was the Tahoe Wellness Center.
I would have to defer to Mr. Exline, but I believe he is on the call today. But okay. In the application itself, he's representing the Tahoe Wellness Center.
Because I believe there were some other clients of folks in there that were similarly interested in this amendment. So I just was trying to clarify your response to Ms. Chandler, that it wasn't just the Wellness Center, but that may be the case. And maybe Mr. Exline can help us clarify that. Thank you.
Thanks, Steve. We'll ask Mr. Exline if he's available during public comment on this item to speak on that. Hey, Kevin. Yes.
Thanks. Jennifer, thanks for the presentation. And John, I think this is entirely appropriate. I'm a big fan of flexibility in zoning, particularly when it comes to commercial. There's a blurry line sometimes between commercial and industrial activities. And in the Tahoe Basin, it can be very challenging to find land that is zoned for any sort of manufacturing, even light manufacturing. So I think this is a unique case where it'll stimulate some investment. There's obviously a huge trend of people doing small scale making of things, whether it's wood or it's coffee. I mean, I'm kind of in that boat myself. And it's difficult to navigate the zoning code when you're trying to manufacture something and sell it on site. So I think the location is appropriate. I think especially this process is perfect to address any concerns. And I think this is a smart move. So happy to see it.
Thank you, Kevin.
Mr. Chair, a couple questions, John. Since the Tahoe Wellness Center was the applicant, have they specifically stated what it is they want to do under this amendment?
Well, if the amendment passes, it would allow the Tahoe Wellness Center to manufacture cannabis on site.
Okay. So how come that wasn't an example given in any of the documents leading up to the, you know, through the city, through the planning commission, through the council, and then now with the APC, that's not one of the examples that's given.
Well, originally when the application was submitted, it was kind of focused on particularly on the cannabis business itself. After my discussions with Nick Exline and internally, we thought that this whole concept made a lot of sense, and we wanted to be more inclusive of all other retail uses and not specific just to cannabis. Cannabis would just be one business that could take an opportunity of these changes, but I think we want to encourage it for all other retail uses also. You know, whether it's, you know, someone, like I said, roasting coffee or a chocolate shop or, you know, confectioners, we wanted this to be an opportunity for other retail uses and not specific just to cannabis use.
That makes sense. A recommendation I would make is that should be given as a specific example as this moves forward to the governing board, because the reality is that's the applicant who put it forward. In general, you know, I think this, I was actually on the planning commission at the city when this area plan was approved, and it alludes to it in the staff report that, you know, essentially what we're talking about is not precluded under the existing area plan. I can understand why there's a desire to clarify it further, and to Kevin's point, in general, I'm supportive of clarifying these kinds of uses because we're not seeing the redevelopment occur at the rate that was anticipated with the regional plan and the subsequent area plan. So we need to take down barriers that are keeping us from getting there. But cannabis is a really controversial issue. It's been controversial from the beginning. And I think we need to be very clear that that's the intent of the applicant in this particular case of why this amendment is moving forward, because I realize that they're going to have to move forward after this amendment. If it's approved, they would have to come forward with a specific application for that special use at that site, and that would be reviewed at the time. But I want to avoid, you know, the public being able to say, well, you know, that's not what we were thinking, you know, was being approved as this moved through the process. So that would be, you know, just one recommendation as you move forward. I think we need to be very clear that who the applicant was and what specific use they're looking for and include it as an example as we move forward. The second piece is the owner of that business sits on the city council. I just want to clarify that individual recused themselves through this entire process.
He did.
Okay.
Yes, he did.
Great, thanks. And then just a couple of technical questions. On the IEC, in the air quality and the lighting section, no was checked for all of those areas. And at the programmatic level, I can understand how that conclusion is made. But maybe, Jennifer, if you could speak to, is the thought that at the programmatic level, there's nothing that would indicate these uses would lead to changes in air quality and lighting, and that's why no is selected in the IEC. And then when there's a specific project, they will have to provide evidence that they're staying in line with the not having those significant impacts.
Sure, I can speak to that. This is Jennifer Stell, for the record, TRPA staff. That is correct. So the IEC coming forward in the packet today is a programmatic level document. When projects come forward, they will be need to reviewed for findings and compliance at the project level. Real quick, just on a note regarding these amendments, you know, Sue Chandler mentioned, you know, this is targeting an aging town center. It was an existing town center. The Gateway District boundaries were moved to include this area for redevelopment a couple years ago. In the development of these particular amendments to spur local businesses, to support local businesses, we actually took a nod to existing land uses that were allowed and already evaluated along the Ski Run Boulevard for similar types of uses to encourage maker type of spaces. So that particular use was evaluated at the time in 2013 that the TCAP was amended. And then, yes, you are correct. We've done the evaluation at a programmatic level now for adding these in the Gateway District. And then when a particular business or project comes forward, those will be further evaluated for impacts to air quality, water quality, and things like that. As John Hitchcock also mentioned in his presentation, these uses would be allowed as a special use. So they would require a hearings officer at TRPA level and then approval by the planning commission at the city level. Does that answer your question, Jason?
Yeah, thank you. And then just one piece on that is, you know, the area, the special use number one that is at this Bijou site, to separate it from the special area number one that Jennifer pointed out on the map, is there a reason that it was such a constrained footprint that we're only looking at this amendment? Because what it intimates when you look at the map is Tahoe Wellness Center is the applicant. The footprint of this special area is very small. It's in one of the westerly area of the area plan, and it's where that business is. Is there a reason that we didn't look at a bigger footprint? Because many of the examples of the kinds of businesses that could take advantage of this amendment, there are other places along 50, especially as you get closer to the state line, where it seems like you would want to encourage the same thing. So I guess the question is, why is the footprint so specific and small?
John, would you like to speak to that?
We looked at it, you know, when the amendment was submitted. Obviously, you know, we were concerned, right? Adding industrial wholesale distribution as to a tourist quarry plan, and these are uses primarily found in industrial areas, and we wanted to keep the amendment focus at this point. From my perspective, if it does become successful, I think it's a model that we can expand to other areas of the tourist core area.
Okay. Last thing is, on page 82 in the findings, there's mention of, you know, this amendment anticipates, you know, the implementation of this amendment would anticipate an acceleration in threshold gains, but it stops there. It doesn't really say why. And given some of the nuances of this amendment and what's in the existing area plan, I just encourage you at that point on page 82 for the governing board presentation or packet that there's some additional narrative added there as to how, answering that question of how will this amendment accelerate, you know, those threshold gains. I think that's an important disclosure for us to make and be able to be as specific as possible in terms of how this amendment will actually help accelerate those threshold gains. And that's it. Thank you.
Noted, Jason. We can definitely make a few additions there. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Jason. Good comments. Can I just follow up on Mr. Hitchcock, when you say manufacturing of cannabis will be allowed there, can we just clarify for everyone in the public, does that mean growing cannabis or does that mean other things?
That means ability to grow cannabis, manufacturing, and sell it on site.
Okay. In addition to, I would presume, making it into other products, edible things, and
that's correct.
Okay. Just wanted to clarify that. Thank you. Other APC members with comments?
Mr. Chair, this is Hillary Roverud. Sorry to butt in, but I had a comment here.
Am I? Yeah, come on in.
Yeah, I just wanted to just also point out that the amendment does require a kind of demonstration and educational component. So it's not just adding uses to areas that are, the vision is to be tourist focused, but It really is intended to enhance the tourist experience, give them more experiential opportunities within the tourist core to be able to kind of witness those kinds of production things happening or makerspace things happening, be educated on how those things occur. So that is a requirement along with that's in the proposed language for this amendment. So I just wanted to make sure that doesn't get kind of lost in the discussion, that this isn't, it isn't allowing for those industrial uses to kind of occur behind closed doors and just create, you know, nuisances that sometimes we think of that come along with industrial things that, you know, through that use permit process, we'll be able to look really closely at that and make sure that it, whatever is proposed is enhancing the experience for those that are in the tourist core, whether it's visitors or residents. So just wanted to add that to the discussion.
Thank you. That is important to note. Appreciate that, Hillary.
Mr. Chair, one more question. This is a somewhat unique site within the area plan because there is a small residential contingent directly behind this particular site. John or Jennifer, I don't know through the process, if you guys could share what the feedback has been, if there has been any, from those residential properties adjacent to this site.
We didn't receive any comments from any of the residents along, I think it's Balbijou there. There's about four or five residential uses. We did receive comments from an individual who lived in Sierra Shores, who was had questions about the proposal, but at the end of the day was supportive of the amendment itself. And we did notify all property owners within the Gateway District as well as within 300 feet of the Gateway District boundary.
Thanks, John. Anything else from APC members before I go to public comment? Okay. All right, let me move us now to public comment on this item. Again, to participate in the meeting, go to trpa.gov. In the calendar, click on Advisory Planning Commission Meeting, January 18, 2022. There you'll find a link to the public webinar hosted on GoToWebinar. If any member of the public wishes to address the Advisory Planning Commission at this time, please use the hand-raising function now, and you'll be unmuted by a TRPA staff member.
I have two Molly Armaninos with their hand up, so if you could unmute yourself, Molly, you can address the committee.
Hi, can you guys hear me?
Yes, we can.
Great. Yeah, I just wanted to quickly kind of piggyback off of what Hillary mentioned. I think exciting and an important part of this amendment is the educational component that we're hoping would be a condition upon permitting any businesses. I think in particular, I would like to see businesses educate the public on the sustainable benefits of more in-house manufacturing, be that less vehicle miles traveled because of transportation or other kind of new, like the sustainable renovations to their building, et cetera. So, I want this, I approve this amendment for the sake of this kind of educational and sustainable component. And yeah, that's all. That's all. So thanks.
Thank you, Molly, for your comment.
Mr. Chairman?
Steve.
I think you indicated that Mr. Exline might be aboard. I was hoping that he would offer some public comment.
I was just going to ask that. Mr. Exline, if you are available, do you see him, Catherine, with his hand up?
Let's see. I don't see Mr. Exline, but I know Molly is an employee and her other hand is up, so I'm not sure if he is on under her name.
Okay, why don't we try that line and see?
Yeah, both Molly's are unmuted on my end, so.
No, you are correct. And Molly, thank you so much for registering me for this meeting. I greatly appreciate it. And so, yeah, Nick Exline for the record, and, you know, happy to be joining everyone today. And in the interest of brevity, you know, want to keep this short due to your agenda calendar, but would like to just touch on a few of the items and hopefully provide just a minute of brief context. I think what was really exciting about this project when I first came in contact with the applicant was their willingness to look to incorporate environmentalism and in particular environmental education into the project approval process. I think why I was so impressed by that as the applicant is both myself and my team, Molly included, work really tirelessly with our clients to have them introduce environmental elements whenever and wherever possible. And it's really challenging. And I'd also say from a regulatory perspective, you really don't actually get any benefit from it either. So it's really, it has to be the desire of the applicant meets kind of our team to kind of look to push these things forward. And so the willingness of this applicant and really the excitement of this applicant to use this opportunity for an area plan amendment process to be the first project in the basin to require some level of environmental education meets representation for the accessory space and why it's a benefit, in particular the threshold goals, was really exciting. And I think the question and something Commissioner Drew touched on is, why is this in a small location? I fundamentally agree. I think you as APC members should use your voice and your opportunity for any forthcoming area plan amendment processes to suggest that all future area plan amendment processes require some level of environmental education and justifications for environmental improvement. So to Commissioner Teixeira's question, the TYC was the former applicant and my client, although many other clients I work with and members of the South Lake Tahoe community have expressed great interest, although we were sadly limited to this small area in the Bijou, the corner of Bijou right now. I would say, as it relates to kind of the questions about cannabis and how this was presented, you know, John had touched on that, but I think what was important through the process is nothing is actually changing at the TYC as a result of this amendment. All that's changing is the current non-compliant uses are being legitimized through this process, but from on the ground, absolutely nothing is changing as a result of this process. But what is changing is the opportunity provided to others. And so, the reason we, you know, look to cite other examples was because of kind of the historical discussion around cannabis and the fact that since nothing was changing on that site, looking to other opportunities that might exist with the hope of inspiring others to take similar action. And so, again, thank you so much for your time, but I would really and sincerely encourage you to vote for the recommendation of this amendment and look to have similar items put forth in other amendments. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Exline, for all those responses. Catherine, do we have any other public comment?
No, Mr. Chair, there are no other hands raised to comment on this item.
Okay, thank you, Catherine. Mr. Teixeira, Mr. Drew, did that satisfy any of your questions, comments? Do you want to have any follow-up on that?
Jason? I do. If Jason could go first.
Thanks, Steve. I would say what I'm struggling with is I think the concept of what we're talking about, I am supportive of. I think we've seen it in other tourist areas. It is something that's desired within the kinds of businesses and uses that are allowed within and are proposed within the area plan. I think what I'm struggling with is some of the uses with that are associated with cannabis and other light industrial activities, there are issues associated with them, regardless of whether it's happening now or not, that I am struggling with in terms of that use and that those kinds of facilities within the footprint of the tourist core area plan. That's the fundamental struggle for me. Processing coffee and cannabis operations are not the same thing. Cities and counties across the state, we're working with some of them, are really struggling with some of the air quality and water quality issues from cannabis operations. There are many places across the state that don't have their arms around how to even deal with that. So that's the fundamental struggle that I'm having here, is the larger amendment I'm supportive of, what can be allowed within it, that is the struggle for me.
Thanks, Jason. Steve, yes.
I share many of Mr. Drew's concerns, particularly from my perspective, how this came through the process. I have tremendous respect for Mr. Exline and his inspirational ability as an advocate to get people to be very excited about proposals that he brings forward to various legislative bodies. And, you know, in witnessing the presentation to the Planning Commission and the City Council, I was inspired by a broader application of this opportunity, and I hope that that's still out there. So I'm likely going to support it, but it certainly came through the process without a lot of mention of cannabis specifically. So I again share many of Mr. Drew's concerns about that, but I hope there's a broader ability to apply this in the future. Thank you.
Thanks, Steve. Yeah, I think many of us do agree that, you know, being more forthcoming about truly what the example of the amendment is for would be beneficial when going to the governing board, just for transparency's sake. I know we're not going to get into a back and forth with Mr. Exline, but I was a little confused about how the uses are already occurring and perhaps are just non-conforming, and this would merely bring things into more legal footing. I know that could be more of a code enforcement discussion and other things, but I just wanted to flag that, just highlight that for anyone that missed it. You know, that was a statement by Mr. Exline. It sounds like these activities are already occurring. So that's really more of a city issue, but just wanted to flag that. APC members, any other comments or questions?
This is Jennifer Carr, Mr. Chairman, and others. There is a note on page 33 of the packet that this is an existing non-conforming situation, and so it's noted there in that regard. Now, what happens after this, assuming that it's approved? I was thinking along the same lines you were, Brendan, about aside from just the land use designation, if there are other things about this particular non-conforming use that need to be corrected via code enforcement or something, I just presume that would happen down the road.
Yeah, thanks for pointing that out. I missed it.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
This is Eric with Eric. The fire and the fire rep on. Obviously, with the process, there is a lot of concern with how they process and treat the marijuana products. I think that it is wise that the city put that under in this amendment that it requires a special use. My concern would be that because this is existing, operations already have happening, I'm wondering how they have been addressed and those type of things. I know that's really not under our preview, perhaps, but I just have concerns as an APC member. I would just, I would want to encourage the fact that we said that it would require a special use for anything to be under this new amendment. But two, my concern is a go back and see what happens with these types of industries that are already in place. How are they going to be incorporated into this new plan? I don't want to just wave a stick over them and say, hey, they're okay, they're good by anything we do as an APC, and just put a positive nod to something that could put the community at risk. And I think there are some big concerns with the processing that takes place for marijuana products specifically. Again, I agree, it's a little different than I kind of chuckle to myself. We have to weed through some of the stuff that they're telling us, you know, it's similar to a coffee or a chocolatier. And I don't agree with that. I think that the processing is much different and a much higher risk, and different chemicals are used for the processing of marijuana. And I just wanted to bring that. I know most of the committee is aware of that, but I just would be remiss if I didn't make that statement.
Thank you, Mr. Gavon.
Mr. Ferry, this is Hillary Roverud. I don't know if it'd be helpful for the rest of the commission, but I could provide a little bit more background specifically to Tahoe Wellness Center, if that's helpful.
I think that would be, Hillary, if you could.
Sure. So originally when the Tahoe Wellness Center was established there at the Bijou Center, they were allowed as a medicinal marijuana retail operation. And with that was a component of growing cannabis. So that's where when Mr. X-Line refers to kind of an existing nonconforming situation, it's existing nonconforming with respect to the kind of the zoning and the land use categories of the tourist core area plan. However, the original medicinal marijuana operation there was approved by the city. When the city moved to adopting an ordinance that allowed for adult use cannabis retail, so this is the recreational component, and you know the city is kind of moving along with all these regulations with the rest of the state of California, so it's not specific to the city of South Lake Tahoe, but when the council did that, they entered into an agreement that allowed for the wellness center to also engage in that adult use recreational cannabis business as well. It was kind of, to use a term familiar to all of us, grandfathered in for a certain number of years. And within that time frame, the wellness center does need to get the land use and the zoning consistent and adoption and approval of a special use permit in order for them to continue operations, similarly to how they have been over the last couple of years. So with the approvals, the city's approvals associated with the Tahoe Wellness Center, there are certainly safety inspections that occur at every one of the cannabis related businesses within the city of South Lake Tahoe. Our fire inspector is in there frequently. And then, you know, obviously when there are construction projects going on with tenant improvements, things like that, our building inspectors are in there very frequently. So there are consistent inspections of all the cannabis businesses. There's pretty detailed oversight by the city that occurs. So wanted to make sure that those comments were addressed, that there are no situations where we are ignoring the potential safety issues related to different cannabis-related businesses throughout the city. With respect to this particular amendment, yes, it would allow for the wellness center to continue having that growing component as an adult-use recreational cannabis business. And with the review of the special use permit, we will be again revisiting all of those safety issues. If there's anything new that has come up, then those will be addressed through that special use permit. The, you know, the potential factors that might create some incompatibility with neighboring uses are very different with all the different types of uses that could potentially take advantage of this amendment. You know, things that have been brought up, coffee, you have odors, cannabis, you have odors, manufacturing component, you know, the safety issues that come up with that. You know, there are a whole variety of small scale manufacturing and kind of maker space activities that present their own safety concerns and their own potential nuisance concerns. So that's where the requirement to have the special use permit review is so essential to this particular amendment, because I think we all know that our business community is very dynamic and they're coming up with, you know, new ideas all the time. And through the use permit process, we'll be able to really dive into those proposals and make sure that the nuisance issues, the safety issues, traffic, parking, all of those things are really looked at specific to what's being proposed. So I don't know if that helps with a little bit of the background on the Wellness Center. Certainly acknowledge they are the applicant that submitted to the city requesting these amendments. A lot of what's being discussed here with the APC have been discussed throughout the process, and kind of where we've landed in terms of the city approval of this is that, you know, it could really benefit the entire tourist with respect to other businesses creating these experiences for visitors and residents that are interested in the demonstration and the educational component of it, whether it's cannabis or any of the other uses.
Thank you, Hillary. That's helpful for me. Any commissioners want to follow up with Hillary on anything?
Thank you, Hillary. That helps quite a bit.
Yeah.
And again, that's, you know, I think it's really imperative that you have the special use permit with it. So thank you.
Okay. Any final thoughts on this item?
Mr. Chair, just one last thing. Based on Hillary's comments, which were really helpful, Hillary, thank you. I think for me where it stands is our decision today, and this is maybe a question for John Marshall, is we are clarifying at the programmatic level that this amendment, our decision is on this amendment at the programmatic level. And given that it's within a special use, the individual uses that are proposed on any particular site as a part of any particular project, that is left up to the purview of the city in approving that special use permit. And what I'm getting at is it would be, my understanding and takeaway would be, it would be inappropriate for this body as a part of our decision on this amendment to put any conditions on that approval in terms of the types of uses that could be allowed and the types of uses that couldn't be allowed. That needs to take place at the special use permit level.
Thank you, Jason. Yes, I generally agree with you that you are, I'll also put it a little differently, you are not, by approving this amendment, endorsing any particular use to come forward for a special use permit. And likewise, you are not excluding any particular use that is consistent with the applicable zoning. That's to be left to the consideration at the special use permit stage. I would note also that the city is acting both for its own code as well as permitting, I think in this instance, for TRPA. So while they would be issuing essentially a delegation permit, that could be appealed to TRPA.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks, John. Other final thoughts? Okay. Let us now move forward on this item. We do have two motions to consider. They are found in your packet, and I believe we can pull those up on the screen. There they are. Thank you. Any APC member wish to entertain the first motion?
Mr. Chair, I'm happy to make a motion.
Thank you, Jennifer.
I move to recommend TRPA Governing Board approval of the required findings, including a finding of no significant effect or adoption of the proposed tourist core area plan amendments as provided in attachment B, with consideration given to potentially renaming this special area to.
Thank you, Jennifer. Could I get a second on that motion?
I'll second that.
Thank you, Eric. Okay, I'm going to turn this over to Tracy for a roll call vote on motion number one.
Mr. Oling?
Yes.
Ms. Chandler?
Yes.
Mr. Drake?
Yes.
Mr. Drew?
Yes.
Ms. Carr?
Yes.
Mr. Gavon?
Yes.
Ms. Jacobson?
Yes.
Ms. Ferris?
Yes.
Ms. Simon?
Yes.
Ms. Roverud?
Yes.
Ms. Stella?
Yes.
Mr. Teixeira?
Yes.
Mr. Young?
Yes.
And Mr. Ferry?
Yes.
Mr. Chair, that motion passes.
Thank you, Tracy. Let's go on to motion two. Anyone care to make that motion?
Brendan, this is Sue Chandler. I'll make the motion.
Thank you,
I move
Sue.
To recommend TRPA Governing Board adoption of Ordinance 2022, amending Ordinance 2020-06 as previously amended, to amend the Tourist Core Area Plan to include the additions and revisions as provided in Attachment B.
Thank you, Susan. Anyone care to second that motion?
This is Kevin. I'll second the motion.
Thank you, Kevin. Tracy, back to you for a roll call vote on motion number two.
Mr. Young?
Yes.
Ms. Roverud?
Yes.
Mr. Teixeira?
Yes.
Ms. Stala?
Yes.
Ms. Jacobson?
Yes.
Ms. Simon?
Yes, sorry, I was muted.
Mr. Drew?
Yes.
Ms. Ferris?
Yes.
Mr. Gavon?
Yes.
Mr. Drake? Mr. Drake?
I don't see his video. Let's see, he may have dropped off for a second. He did second the motion. I don't know if we consider that an affirmative vote.
No, we can't. Was he the maker of the motion?
No,
Ms. Chandler was.
Okay, we can proceed.
Ms. Carr?
Yes.
Mr. Oling?
Yes.
Ms. Chandler?
Yes.
Mr. Drake?
I don't see him in our list. I believe he may have just dropped out.
Mr. Chair, the motion passes.
Thank you, Tracy. I will, for the record, I will vote yes as well. And we've got two successful motions on that item. So thank you again to Ms. Self and Mr. Hitchcock for your presentations. And we are good to move on to the governing board. So have a good rest of your day.
Thank you.
And I'm going to move us along. Let's now turn to item 5B. This is a discussion and possible action on the certifications of the final environmental impact statement for the Tahoe Keys Lagoon Aquatic Weed Control Methods Test Project. Information on this item can be found on page 147 of the agenda packet. And I'm going to pass this over to Joanne Marchetta to begin the staff presentation.
Hi, Mr. Ferry. This is Hillary Roverwood. Sorry to interrupt. I just wanted to note for the record that I'm going to be exiting the meeting, and Mr. Hitchcock, as the city's staff representative alternate, is going to be continuing on with the rest of the meeting. Thank you.
Okay.
Have a good day.
Thank you for clarifying that, Hillary. And welcome, John, in a new role.
Mr. Chair, I have a slight correction on the agenda item. It's 5B, but the screen says 6B.
Good catch. I don't know if we can just make that correction now or if we'll just note it. This is item 5B per the posted agenda. Okay, I think we've gotten that out of the way. I'm going to go to Ms. Marchetta. Welcome, and I'll turn this over to you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good morning, members of the APC. Joanne Marchetta, for the record. Today's presentation is on the very important number one aquatic invasive species control threat to Lake Tahoe. And APC's role today is to consider a recommendation to the governing board certifying the technical adequacy of the final environmental impact statement for the applicant, who is the Tahoe Keys Property Owners Association, for that applicant's proposed test of control methods for weeds in the Tahoe Keys. And I think most of you know that invasive weed control work in the Keys has had a long history, and there's been little overall success in getting ahead of the growing infestation there in the Keys lagoons. That's why it's important today to understand a little bit of the regulatory context of this proposal, a little context about the history of how this test proposal came about. And so to begin today, I'm going to offer some short background on what got us here and then turn this to John Marshall so that you all clearly understand the scope of today's action and APC's role. Then staff and consultants will present the environmental impact statement, both the alternatives in broad outline and the specific analysis of the potential impacts, resource protection measures, and project mitigations. So to begin, I think you know that aquatic invasive species prevention and control has been a top priority initiative for Lake Tahoe for well more than a decade. And the Tahoe Partnership agrees on a widely shared interest, and that is that invasive weeds that were introduced decades ago into the Tahoe Keys lagoons are the number one AIS control threat to the Keys, as well as to Greater Lake Tahoe. TRPA has been leading the work to combat AIS in the Tahoe region since 2007, just after invasive quagga mussels were discovered nearby at Lake Mead. And the AIS partnership agrees that the number one threat in AIS control is right here at ground zero in the Tahoe Keys lagoons, where the aquatic weeds infestation is serious, it's been growing, and it's of increased concern both to public health due to the growing risk of toxic cyanobacteria outbreaks, as well as being an actual threat of spread to other locations around the lake. The Keys lagoons hold by far the largest aquatic invasive plant infestation within the Tahoe region at 172 acres. It is greater in size and biomass than all other Tahoe marinas combined. So we have a very large, unprecedented, and growing problem on our hands. The proposed test project here does not come to us as a typical land use or natural resource planning process. And many in the public have been confused as to who is making the proposal and why. So let me make that clear. The proposal here arises out of an application for a test project that was submitted by the Tahoe Keys Property Owners Association. I'll refer to them as TKPOA. And on behalf, TKPOA proposed that test project on behalf of its approximately 1,500 private homeowner members. The applicant's proposal here is to test aquatic invasive plant treatment methods. And that proposal arises in a complex regulatory scheme under the Clean Water Act that can be quite confusing to the public. Here, you've got a large and diverse group of private property owners who are being required by the Lahontan Regional Water Quality Control Board to control a pollutant of concern on their private property, in this case, aquatic invasive weeds in the Keys Lagoons. And those roughly 1,500 private homeowners within TKPOA own the lake bed of the lagoons that's needing treatment for the weeds. So in response to that Lahontan regulatory order, TKPOA, as the applicant, is now required ultimately to propose an acceptable and legally sufficient plan to control those invasive weeds in the Keys. It was 5 years ago, in 2017, TKPOA made its first try to respond to that Lahontan Water Board order, but TKPOA faced early opposition to that first response. It was a comprehensive control proposal, and it would have included broadcast herbicide treatment. The agencies, stakeholders, the public said at that time, you don't have enough information to go that route. So the control project again stalled, as it has so many times before, and the applicant struggled to provide all of the information required and to satisfy what were essentially public fears and concerns about what remedy to implement here in Tahoe. What we know from decades of experience is that often what it takes to solve the lake's toughest, most insoluble problems like this one is that rather than saying, hey, it's your problem, you figure it out, good luck, it often takes a much more collaborative approach to reach a solution. So with that more shared problem-solving approach in mind, by 2018, we began working with the Keys property owners and other key stakeholders. We convened a stakeholder committee. We convened an even broader stakeholder consultation circle around an approach that engaged property owners with agencies, key stakeholders, and the public. So as a new partner now with the Keys property owners, we secured funding to help seek a more supported solution. And now, in addition to the millions that TKPOA has spent over the years to control and study the Keys weeds problem, over the last 4 years, partners other than TKPOA have contributed more than an additional $2 million. We've supported the cost of a facilitator to help work with the stakeholders and public. We've funded technical studies like this final environmental impact statement, and we've shared in the costs of different interim treatment methods to gather valuable data. So it for well over a year, and this was before COVID when we could actually meet in person, for well over a year, we literally sat at a collaborative consultation table together to understand what information did we have, what information did we still need, what questions were still did we still need to understand. And so when we as diverse stakeholders came together, it was clear we had to lessen the unknowns and the fears of broad scale treatment before we would be able to move ahead to any final remedy. What arose out of that consultation was an agreement to study a proposal to test different weed control methods. And in fact, we realized that what we most needed to know was a question of first impression, meaning it had never been considered by others at any other water body where similar invasive plants have been treated extensively year over year. Here in Tahoe, what we wanted to consider was a different approach that, you know, could we effectively limit herbicide application to a one-time use and only in the unique and controlled environment of the Keys Lagoons and not in the open waters of Lake Tahoe. So the question we designed the test around was what control methods independently or in combination could effectively knock back 172-acre infestation, and then could we maintain that knockback with only non-herbicide methods over year over year? And to test that in the unique and varied substrate environments of the Keys Lagoons. No other water body anywhere ever has evaluated, tried, or tested this approach to herbicide use for aquatic weeds. And this is among the information from this test will be the information we most need when we, again, as a group of collaborative partners and broad stakeholder interests, have to sit together at a table several years from now to work out the much harder question of how to design and implement a comprehensive remedy for the invasive plants in the Keys Lagoons. Although you're probably going to hear comment today asserting otherwise, the inclusion of herbicide in a test as one method does not presuppose the use of herbicide in any final remedy. So together, the stakeholders designed this combination of tests that could help answer both this unique question about minimum use of herbicide, as well as other information gaps about the efficacy of methods in combination. And in its design, we made sure that the test protocols are scientifically rigorous, are statistically adequate, are carefully controlled, and are technically sound. So the final environmental impact statement you're considering today for its technical adequacy is not for any kind of a final remedy. What it does do is evaluate a proposal and alternatives to that proposal to perform a carefully controlled test of different aquatic invasive plant treatment options on a small but representative scale to help close information gaps and address public fears about the effects of treatments, different treatments. Homeowners and stakeholders collaboratively chose this route to find a shared approach if possible to the complex and often confusing regulatory scheme the TKPOA found itself in. We are today presenting for recommended certification the final environmental impact statement that evaluates the test and alternatives to it. The FEIS analysis here is comprehensive. It discloses potential environmental effects as is required. It shows that with carefully designed resource protection measures and multiple layers of fail-safe mitigations, the proposed test poses no threat to the environment of the Keys or to to the lake itself. It's on that basis and the whole of the record that we're recommending today that APC recommend to the governing board to certify the EIS for the test project under the compact. And I will note that last week, the Lahontan Water Board similarly reviewed the test project EIS, and that board voted unanimously to certify the final environmental impact report under CEQA. So I'm going to turn this now to John Marshall, TRPA's general counsel, to make clear the scope of APC's charge today. Thank you.
Thank you, Joanne. As you heard from Joanne, this really is her and our role is about setting context. Now, normally the APC does not hear projects, and this is kind of described at page 147 of your packet. Those either are handled at staff, hearings officer, or straight to the governing board. But for projects that require certification of an EIS, the EIS comes to the APC for your recommendation to the governing board on whether or not to certify environmental document or the environmental impact statement. So what you have is this delicate balance between the project itself, the merits of the project is not before you, but the certification of the EIS is. And what the best way to think about that is the permit, you're not acting on the permit. You're not making a recommendation on the permit for this project. And you're not making a recommendation on the findings that go along with the approval of the project. What you have is just kind of the environmental considerations articulated in the EIS and whether or not the EIS technically addresses all the components that are required and does so in a manner that's substantively reasonable. So that's your narrow kind of view today as to what you're going to hear. And that's frankly what is agendized for you to hear. So for both your and the public comment, comments on the validity of the project or the permit is outside the scope of today's hearing. It is just on the adequacy of the environmental document. And if you have concerns about that or you want a little more information down the road, please ask me and I can help you navigate that. But essentially, you'll see through the presentation today and the staff report that the focus really is on the adequacy of the environmental document. And that's what the governing board wants to hear from you all as to what your recommendation on the adequacy of that environmental document. So if you don't have any questions, I'm gonna turn it now over to Dennis and Jim Good for the main presentation.
Thank you, John. Thank you, Joanne. Good morning. I'm assuming you can hear me okay. Mr. Chair, members of the Commission, I'm Dennis Abaglo. I'm the Aquatic Resources Program Manager for TRPA, and I oversee our Aquatic Invasive Species Program. And as been mentioned today, we're taking another step towards solving our biggest AIS threat to Lake Tahoe. And we're asking for your recommendation to the Governing Board to certify the Environmental Impact Statement on the Tahoe Keys Lagoon's Aquatic Weed Control Methods Test. The EIS is scientifically rigorous, it's comprehensive, an analysis of a test of those different aquatic invasive species treatment methods that will provide the missing information needed to design a complete treatment of the Tahoe Keys. In my presentation, I'll walk you through the aspects of the analysis, why it's needed, the extensive collaboration and public engagement and data collection that took place in the development of the proposed project and the alternatives. Then I'll turn it over to Jim Good from Environmental Science Associates. He'll describe the impact analysis and the mitigations identified. Then I'll summarize the public comments we received and the responses the agencies provided, and that resulted in the release of the final EIS. And then I'll conclude with a summary of the necessary findings and ask for your recommendation.
Hey, Dennis, this is John Michael. At least on my screen, we don't have the presentation up.
Let's see. How about now?
There you go.
Okay, sorry about that. Dennis,
this is Joanne. I don't know if this is intentional, but you don't have your camera on.
Oh, I thought I did. I apologize. Can you see my smiling face now?
We got you now, Dennis.
Okay, thank you. Apologize for that. So we're going to start with a purpose and need in the project. So why are we doing this? As you've heard Joanne, me and others say, it's a complex problem that needs really more information to solve. We've had a lot of success in the AIS program, I'm really proud to say, but the Keys is really a whole new ballgame. It's exponentially bigger, extremely dense, and has those difficult conditions to treat within, as you've heard Joanne say. It's the main source of spread and our number one priority for control. An assessment of all the tools needed is really needed if we hope to find an ultimate solution. TKPOA has been working on this for decades to address the weed issue. And in response to those waste discharge requirements they are under from Lahontan, they submitted the application to the two agencies to use aquatic herbicides to treat the infestation within the lagoons. So I think you're all aware aquatic herbicides have never been used before in Tahoe, which generated concern, but a lot of thoughtful discussion. And rather quickly, TRPA engaged our partners to start a collaborative process and help develop a stakeholder committee to ensure a broad range of perspectives and transparency and have a forum for open discussion. TKPOA was very receptive to this and fully supported the process and really the need to do that thorough analysis of a test. In addition to TRPA, Lahontan, and the Tahoe Keys Property Owners Association, the stakeholder committee consists of partners with diverse points of view. There's the League Disabled Lake Tahoe that provides an environmental nonprofit organization perspective, the Tahoe Water Suppliers Association, drinking water suppliers throughout the region, and the Tahoe Resource Conservation District, one of our main partners, not only in prevention, but in control, and really local experts on control here in the basin. Perhaps the most important outcome of that collaborative process was the stakeholder committee's urging to take a more measured approach and collect more information to get the best chance for success, which was the impetus for a test. As I mentioned, a test that assesses multiple methods, both independently and in combination, to implement a scientific experiment and obtain the best information possible to design a holistic treatment for the Keys. Once the test idea was put in place, an extensive public engagement process began. Scoping of the project started in the summer of 2019. That included multiple workshops and meetings to inform the public of the test project and seek their input on a range of alternatives and issues to be included in the analysis. As a result, two action alternatives were developed, which I'll talk about momentarily, but one of the strongest recommendations we heard during that was that the no action alternative really needed the same level of analysis as the proposed project, as that was important to understand what the risk is of doing nothing. Scoping also helped inform a massive data collection effort, over 1.5 million data points collected over the summer of 2019 to understand baseline conditions, how nutrient cycling in the Keys works, and provide a strong foundation for the detailed impact analysis. One of the major outcomes of that data collection was that the weeds themselves fuel the nutrient availability in the Keys. Each year when plants die off, the nutrients in the stems and leaves return to the water and ultimately settle back in the sediment, becoming readily available for the future weed growth. So while controlling upland sources of nutrients is important and it's also being addressed by the TKPOA, controlling the weeds themselves is the best way to disrupt that cycle. So the project description, after scoping a complete analysis to reveal potential impacts on the proposed project and alternatives began, the proposed project is that test of multiple methods, both independent and combination, as we said, to gain a true comparison of how those different treatment methods work. The test is broken down by a use of group A methods. That includes herbicides, ultraviolet light treatments, and laminar flow aeration in that first year to provide initial knockback of weeds. Then in years two and beyond, group B methods, which are all non-herbicidal, would be used to maintain the infestation at manageable levels. Those methods includes diverse-assisted suction, hand pulling, bottom barriers that we're all familiar with in the AIS program, and also utilizing ultraviolet light in that capacity. As stated in the EIS, herbicides would only be used in that one-time treatment that first year. And as you heard Joanne say, that's an innovative in and of itself. Tahoe's AIS program has a history of being innovative, for the first time using bubble curtains to control weeds, first time to use ultraviolet light to control weeds. And so this just builds on that history. This is an example of the test locations. It's a total of 41 acres. You can see the different color schemes that identify the herbicide sites, they identify the ultraviolet light sites, and the combination sites. This here is an example of how a combination approach might work. This is utilizing ultraviolet light down the middle where it has the best chance of treating the weeds more effectively. It doesn't have to navigate the docks and other obstructions within the Keys. And then the herbicide treatments would occur along the edges. So you're kind of maximizing the effectiveness while minimizing the amount of herbicide use. Action alternative two is similar to the control methods test, but it does not include herbicide use. So it removes that ability to learn how all tools perform under the same conditions at the same time. And the dredge alternative would remove the organic layer. So this would be a suction dredge type application, which has never been done before in Tahoe, but to remove plants, the roots and the turions, as well as the substrate that the weeds reside in with all the nutrients in that loose organic layer. And then the no action alternative, as I mentioned, this is essentially doing nothing as far as treatment. We have nothing gained, nothing learned, no ability to inform future long-term treatment of the keys, and weeds would just continue to spread. And so now I'm going to turn it over to Jim Good, and he'll describe the analysis, the potential impacts, and how any potential impact for the proposed project is mitigated to less than significant. Jim?
Thank you, Dennis. Good morning, everyone. I'm Jim Good. I'm an aquatic scientist with Environmental Science Associates. Okay, this does look like my first slide here. So today I'm going to be summarizing our process for studying the environmental impacts, both of the proposed project and the action alternatives and the no action alternative. Could you back up one slide?
That's all I have.
Okay, there's one missing. I'm going to bring that up on another screen here. So you can stay there, that's fine. And then I'm also going to describe the potential environmental issues that were identified and the mitigation measures that we developed for both the control methods test and the alternatives. Our environmental impact evaluation process started in 2017 with an initial study and environmental checklist. We reviewed the existing information. We identified potential impacts for the project and concluded that for this project to go forward, an EIS and an EIR for CEQA would be required. So in 2019, we undertook a very extensive baseline data collection effort. We collected 6 months growing season information on all of the physical, chemical, and biological characteristics of the lagoon environment at Tahoe Keys. I led a team of 5 PhD specialists in different areas of aquatic science, environmental toxicology, limnology, aquatic plants, fisheries, and hydrology. One important thing we used our data for was to develop a conceptual model of nutrient loading and nutrient cycling within the Tahoe Keys lagoons. We used our baseline data and other information and found 2 very important characteristics in the Tahoe Keys. First, the aquatic weeds take their nitrogen and phosphorus primarily from the sediments, and when they die back, they release some nutrients to the water column and also return nutrients back to the sediments. And secondly, there's an inexhaustible supply of nutrients in the sediments. So while controlling non-point sources from the watershed is very important for limiting algal blooms and cyanobacteria, the source control will not reduce the aquatic weed problem. You just have to deal with this inexhaustible supply of nutrients in the sediments. Okay, so with our EIS and EIR, we identified 43 issues for the control methods test. Most of these issues are within the lagoons where most activities occur in the project. And these included issues for environmental health, hydrology, water quality, and aquatic ecology. We also evaluated a lot of other resources such as air quality, recreation, traffic, cultural resources, etc. And except for the no action alternative, we found that impacts can be mitigated to be less than significant for each issue. Next slide, please. So first, for the project proposal or the control methods test, in the way that the project was designed to be implemented, resource protection measures built into the project addressed many of those 43 issues, and we were left with 10 issues that we found to be potentially significant without mitigation. These included the exposure and health risks to the workers who would be applying the herbicides, the potential for detectable concentrations of herbicide chemicals to persist in the lagoon water, short-term increases of aluminum in lagoon water, increased potential for harmful algal blooms, oxygen depletion in the lagoon water, increased phosphorus and nitrogen released by the decaying plants, and effects on non-target aquatic plants, including sensitive species, that would also result in changes in the aquatic plant communities. Again, for all these issues, we found that they would be less than significant after mitigation. Next slide. So let's look at the mitigation for the control methods test. With the herbicides, applicator training and licensing would be required for all the workers potentially exposed to the chemicals. Application rates would be less than the approved level rates. There would be a chemical breakdown and other resource protection measures all led to a conclusion that there would be less than a significant risk of persistence of the herbicide chemicals in the lagoon water. Spill prevention and response plans would be important requirements to prevent excess concentrations of herbicides from entering the lagoon. And aeration would be used if needed to accelerate aerobic degradation. For aluminum, and this is aluminum that resides now in the sediments, best management practices to minimize sediment disturbance would prevent the aluminum from being released into the water, where it's potentially toxic to cold water fish and other aquatic life. For the phosphorus, nitrogen, and the potential to increase harmful algal blooms, the timing and limited size of weed treatments is important in minimizing the amount of plant tissue that's decomposing. There would be the use of lanthanum modified clay to remove phosphorus from the lagoon water if real-time monitoring identified the need for that. So this lanthanum modified clay, it binds the phosphorus particles that are in the water. They settle to the bottom sediments, and they remain chemically bound in the sediments and not available. So you essentially starve the cyanobacteria and phytoplankton of an essential nutrient. And then finally, aeration, if it's needed, would make conditions less favorable or harmful blooms by circulating water. Next slide, please. And continuing with the control methods test mitigation for dissolved oxygen, by the timing and the limited size treatments, that limits the amount of plant tissue that is killed and decomposing. So it limits the oxygen demand from those decaying plants. And real-time monitoring of dissolved oxygen would be used to see if aeration is needed to maintain the water quality objectives for DO. Spring macrophyte surveys are the important mitigation to make sure that we're concentrating the weed control treatments on the target species and avoiding impacts to non-target plants, including sensitive species, and thereby avoiding adverse impacts to the aquatic plant community composition overall. Next, please. So again, action alternative one is the testing of aquatic weed control methods that are part of the proposed project, all except for herbicides. So most of the potentially significant issues and mitigation for alternative one are the same as I've already described for the control methods test. So again, for aluminum, best management practices would be used to minimize sediment disturbance and the release of aluminum from the sediment into the water. For phosphorus, nitrogen, and the potential for increased harmful algal blooms, the timing and the limited size of treatments minimizes the amount of decaying plants and release of nutrients. And aeration or lanthanum-modified clay could be used to control cyanobacteria if indicated by monitoring. And for dissolved oxygen, the timing and limited size of the treatments minimizes the amount of oxygen demand from decaying plants. And again, aeration would be used if dissolved oxygen concentrations being monitored in the lagoons begin to approach the minimum requirements of the water quality objectives. And these spring macrophyte surveys before implementing any of the weed control methods would be used to adjust the test site boundaries, focus on target plants, and avoid non-target plant species and impacts to the plant communities as best as possible. Next, please. Action alternative two is very different from the other alternatives. It's the dredging, hydraulic dredging and substrate replacement. So here the potential significant impacts and mitigations are different. First, there's a greater risk from aluminum in the sediments. There's a lot more sediment disturbance involved, and that drives the need for more mitigation. So this hydraulic dredging, it generates a lot of dredge spoils, essentially a slurry that has to be transported to a processing site where it can be dewatered and prepared for disposal. So spill prevention is needed during the dredge spoils transport and handling. There's a lot of dewatering effluent that's generated, and that requires treatment and testing. And you have to have leak prevention, spill control, and containment plans that are followed to control the release, potential release of any of this dewatering effluent into LAC during the processing, the dewatering and preparation for transport. And then at the dredge sites themselves in the lagoons, turbidity curtain barriers would be used to contain any migration of the turbid water from outside of the actual test site. As far as the potential contribution to flooding from discharge of dewatering effluent, that could be mitigated in two different ways. And one would be if the dewatering effluent could be discharged to the sanitary sewer system, or just by simply limiting discharge to Lake Tulac to when water levels are low. The turbidity controls for dredging, substrate replacement, and dewatering are all important to meet water quality requirements. And for dissolved oxygen depletion, you could have oxygen demand from the sediments, the organic sediments that are disturbed. So by the timing and limited size of the treatments, turbidity controls, and use of aeration if needed, you could minimize those effects to dissolved oxygen. Next, please. For increases in phosphorus and nitrogen, these turbidity controls and the, during the substrate replacement as well as the dredging and the dewatering are all important to prevent nutrients from leaving the sediments and entering the water. And especially effluent treatment would be required in testing before any release of dewatering effluent to make sure that the phosphorus and nitrogen levels were adequately reduced. Spring macrophyte surveys would be used in these dredge areas, and again, adjusting test site boundaries to focus on the target species. And looking at the effects on non-target riparian and wetland habitats and species, potential for impacts to Pope Marsh or the riparian areas at Lake Tulac could be eliminated by discharging the effluent to the sanitary sewer or discharging in the summer and fall when the water levels are low. I think that's the end of my – oh, I'm sorry. There's an important slide left here, and this is in this EIR, EIS, we took an in-depth look at what would happen under the no-action alternative. So as Dennis said, this would be moving ahead with a limited amount of weed control efforts that thus far have been unsuccessful, and the continued spread of aquatic weeds in Lake Tahoe. Things that really wouldn't change are this ongoing risk of short-term aluminum increases anytime the sediment is disturbed in the lagoons, and the ongoing potential risk from harmful algal blooms that have been observed the last several years in the lagoons. The long-term risks of water quality impacts from this growing aquatic invasive weed problem in Lake Tahoe are quite serious. Those could include increases in water temperature, increases in turbidity, which reduce the water clarity, increase in floating weed fragments, more changes in fluctuation in pH, lower dissolved oxygen, and increases in phosphorus and nitrogen cycling from sediments into the water. I think that includes concludes my presentation now. Cut myself off again. Now, this is the last slide here. So there's also a lot of increased long-term impacts to aquatic ecology to be concerned with under this no-action alternative. The displacement of native plant species with invasive species and resulting shifts in aquatic plant communities. These also reduce the health of the benthic invertebrate community and increase risks to special status fish species and also the habitat for native and recreationally important fish species. And, of course, increase the spread of aquatic invasive species overall, both plants and animals. So these impacts all would contribute to reducing the quality of recreational boating in Lake Tahoe and the ability to meet TRPA recreation thresholds. And also the concern long term about impacts to water supplies in Lake Tahoe from these increasingly impactful water quality conditions. Dennis, I think I can turn it back to you now.
Okay, thanks, Jim. I think I do have one more slide, but I think it was just out of order. So we'll just move on in the environmental review process. And once that impact analysis was released to the public in draft form, the engagement process was continued. And that draft analysis was released to the public in July of 2020 for a 60-day public comment period. In addition to the project website that that was established for the public to obtain information throughout the public process, multiple webinars and virtual meetings were held to ensure the public had several opportunities to weigh in. During the public comment period, we received over 3,000 comments. The large majority is form letters essentially expressing an opinion on herbicide use. While there's certainly opposition to herbicide use, others stated that they really need to be tried in order to have any chance of success at solving the problem. Other common themes, which I'll talk about here, were about the nutrients, harmful algal blooms, blocking off the keys during the test, and concerns of drinking water impacts. Regarding the nutrients, as both Jim and I mentioned, the analysis shows or revealed that the weeds themselves are the primary source of nutrients in the Tahoe Keys. And in order to change that pattern of returning nutrients to the system, actions to control weeds are needed. There were several comments on harmful algal blooms and the cyanotoxins that they may be able to produce, as you heard Jim speak to. They're already occurring, and any method of treatment, herbicidal or not, could contribute to increases in their occurrences. The analysis identifies mitigations such as aeration that Jim mentioned, making this impact less than significant, and treating early when the biomass is low, when these plants die, releasing less nutrients into the system, and when water is filling in the keys as snow melts to prevent some of those harmful algal bloom formations. We also received comments on putting a barrier between the keys and the rest of the lake during the test. However, that was analyzed and would do nothing really to mitigate any of the potential impacts that were identified, but likely to also result in increased occurrences of those harmful algal blooms, as fresh water would be prevented from entering the lagoons. Protection of drinking water was a concern of commenters. The analysis does conclude that impacts to drinking water from the test are less than significant even before mitigation. That being said, Jim mentioned some of those mitigations and protective measures, which include the double turbidity curtains at all herbicide test locations, and they would remain in place as long as herbicides can be detected. Treating in the spring utilizes the fresh water, filling in the keys, when snow is melting, as there's no other tributaries that go into the keys. The keys lagoons are controlled by the lake itself, and so when that snow is melting, it would prevent any movement out of the keys itself. TKPOA will also be implementing a continuous monitoring program, testing routinely outside of those turbidity curtains in the main lagoon and in the lake proper to ensure herbicides have not escaped those curtains. It is also expected that the herbicides will degrade rather quickly. Tahoe Science Advisory Council also provided input on the analysis, and their review concluded that the EIS is comprehensive and thorough. So the final EIS was released on December 29th, 2021, and includes agency responses to every comment timely received. Responses are in the form of master responses to provide information on recurring themes, and also individual responses where more detail was needed. The final also documents the changes that were made to the draft, most of which are minor corrections or providing additional clarification on an issue. This example here shows examples of how changes were made and how they appear in the final. This is a table that's provided to you as an attachment to the staff report. This is the mitigation table and impact table, and you can see the strikeout underlying document of the changes. In this example, a new column was added to differentiate between what we've heard the mitigations are and what is considered a resource protection measure or items that are included as part of the test. So the staff report and attachment A discuss the findings required to certify the environmental impact statement and the rationale to support those findings. The EIS is technically adequate, includes a reasonable range of alternatives, and responds to all comments timely received. Most importantly, the analysis addresses a broad range of issues and demonstrates that all impacts can be mitigated to less than significant. Only the non-project alternative has significant and unavoidable impacts. I'll also add that any chance we have at controlling weeds lake-wide really hinge on our ability to do so in the Keys. And with that, staff respectfully ask that you provide a recommendation to the governing board to certify the EIS as technically adequate and make the Compact's Article 7 findings as set forth in Attachment A of your packet. Thank you. I appreciate your time, your commitment to solving this lake-wide challenge. And we're certainly happy to answer any questions that you may have. And Kimberly Carringer from TRPA will help facilitate questions and answers.
Thank you, Dennis. Hello, Kim.
Hi there. Kim Carringer for the record from Tahoe Regional Planning Agency. Many of you know me as a facilitator on many projects, so I volunteer to jump in and help facilitate the Q&A section because we have so many people on the line and experts that have been part of this project. We have a lot of people available to answer questions. So I want to double check maybe with Tracy, do we have TKPOA on the line to answer questions as well? Either Rick Lind or Lars Anderson?
Lars Anderson is certainly here.
Okay, just wanted to check because I'll call on them as needed, and we have Jim and Dennis and Joe Marshall and others to answer questions as well. Okay, great.
Okay, fantastic. When would we like to hear the update from Lahontan staff on the action from last week?
I think now. This is John Marshall. I think now is a good time for that.
Seems like it. All right, let's turn that over. I believe, Scott, you were going to do that update. Are you available to do that?
Yes, I am. So good morning, members of APC. My name is Scott Ferguson. I'm a supervising resource control engineer on the Lahontan Water Board staff. And the last Wednesday and Thursday, the Lahontan Water Board held its hearing and board meeting where it considered the project that you've heard about this morning. And there were four actions that were before the board for its consideration. The primary one related to what's before you this morning was certifying the environmental impact report. We were co-leads with TRPA on the environmental document, and you've heard the history of how that was developed. So last Wednesday, it consisted of Water Board staff making its presentation, followed by Tahoe Keys Property Owners Association. And then it was opened up to the interested parties and hearing from them. We had a little over 50 interested parties, and the remainder of the day on Wednesday was taken up by hearing from those interested parties. And the following day, Thursday morning, we started up again and completed receiving input from interested parties. And then Tahoe Keys Property Owners Association had an opportunity for some closing statements. We made some minor changes, recommendations for minor changes to what was before our board. And then our board deliberated and then acted on the four items. They unanimously approved or adopted the resolution that did certify the environmental impact report. They also unanimously adopted a resolution granting an exemption to a basin plan waste discharge prohibition that we have regarding the use of aquatic pesticides in surface waters. And they then also unanimously approved a national pollutant discharge elimination system permit that will regulate the residual herbicides, the rhodamine dye that's being used in this project, and also the use of lanthanum modified clay. And then finally, the Water Board did unanimously approve an order establishing a mitigation and monitoring program, a mitigation monitoring and reporting program for the environmental impact report. And that concluded their actions on Thursday morning. So that's what I wanted to report out on and just let you know what action the board did, Water Board did take last week. And again, all actions were adopted unanimously after receiving testimony and a lot of public input. Are there any questions?
Thank you, Scott. Any questions for Mr. Ferguson from APC members? Okay, hearing none. Scott, will you remain with us just in case something comes up, or are you going to sign off?
No, I will remain with you.
Okay. Thank you for your report, and we'll see if we need to check back in with you here in a bit.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Now I would like to go to APC members. Kim, would you like to do this, or would you like me to do APC members, and you're going to help me just route questions?
Sure. I'll just help you.
Okay, cool. Let's go to APC members. I don't have any comments in the chat asking to speak, but why don't you please go ahead and unmute if you would like a comment question on this item.
Hi, Brendan. This is Eric Young from Washoe County.
Hey, Mr. Young, go ahead.
Hi. Given Mr. Marshall's description of the agenda item and our instructions today and what's before us, I don't think I really have any comments or questions on the adequacy of the document. I think I can be comfortable with the adequacy of the document. I think I will have some, as the project moves forward and comes back before us, which I'm sure it will for updates and so forth and so on, I'll probably have questions about it. I think I don't need this answered today because I don't want to slow down the group, but I think my biggest question, and I apologize for being negative, is are we assuming that one of these alternatives or a grouping of these alternatives will actually get us where we need to go? And are we prepared to find out that after the study that none of these are going to get us where we need to go? And what would we do if that were the case? So I don't need that answer now, but that is on my mind about what if at some point during this study we find out that none of these alternatives or grouping of them is going to get the job done. But I'm very happy with the document. I'm very happy with the adequacy of the document. And I'm looking forward to seeing this project move forward. So thank you.
Thank you, Eric. Other members?
Okay. I can't quite figure out how to raise my hand. This is Judy Simon.
Gotcha, Judy. Why don't you go ahead now?
Can I go ahead? Thank you. And I appreciate Mr. Marshall's outlining what our task is today, but I do think that I need to share what I have heard from my community about the use of herbicides. There's a general feeling that this could threaten our water supply, not necessarily from the test, but from moving forward if the herbicides are a rousing success on the effect on our drinking water. And I do have a couple of technical questions about the environmental impact. Someone mentioned the use of aeration if needed, and I'm wondering how that would be assessed. And also the use of the rare earth lanthanum, a rare earth element in the clay. And is that a costly item and that sort of thing? For the third point I'd like someone to respond to is if there is a degradation in water quality, how is that going to be assessed for the various methods? And is there any indemnification of the Tahoe Keys Property Owners Association if things do go wrong? How are they prepared to work with the test and the testees and all of us who value the lake?
Thank you, Judith. Kim, do you want to do one at a time and not just bulk get all the questions and comments and then go at the end? How do you want to do it?
Yeah, I think Jim Good would be good to answer her first couple questions on the EIS and environmental impacts, and then we could give it to TKPOA to follow up on the monitoring protocol and permit requirements.
Okay.
Okay, the first question that I heard was about the use of aeration. So there's a lot of monitoring that's going to be required during implementation of the weed control methods, whether it's UV light or herbicides, and there's concerns about dissolved oxygen, because decomposing plants place an oxygen demand on the water. And so if real-time measurements of DO show that oxygen levels are declining and approaching water quality objectives, then aeration systems would be used to oxygenate the water. For the herbicide degradation or the breakdown of the herbicide chemicals, the aerobic decomposition by bacteria can be accelerated by using aeration. So aeration would be required at sites where monitoring was showing that acceleration of decomposition was necessary. And finally, the aeration also
benefits other water quality parameters. So the comprehensive monitoring of water quality during the test would indicate whether this tool was needed and when. I think you had a second part of that question. Didn't stick with my mind there.
I was just going to ask about that rare earth element. Special clay, and is it safe to use, and is it an expensive element? I'm always kind of monitoring what's happening with our rare earths.
Yes. So lanthanum modified clay, it's like a bentonite clay product that has this rare earth mineral lanthanum that's part of the composition. You basically take this material and you spread it on the surface of the water, and as it settles down through the water, the phosphorus molecules become sorbed onto the clay particles and chemically bound to the clay. I have not looked into the pricing or the cost of the lanthanum modified clay, but I have looked at the information on evaluation of potential toxicology to aquatic life, and at the concentrations approved for use, that would not present a significant concern for fish or aquatic life in the lagoons.
Yeah, that's just as a follow-up. So if that were used, then it would have the same effect on native species as it would on these invasive species. Is that a fair comment?
Well, understand that what the lanthanum does is that it allows for the binding of phosphorus to these clay particles. And so the effect on the cyanobacteria, which is really what you're targeting with taking the phosphorus out of the water column, would also limit the productivity of other phytoplankton, other algae in the water. So it would basically reduce the productivity of both the cyanobacteria and other phytoplankton while it was in effect.
Did we get all of Judith's questions and comments answered, or were there others?
I think the other one was about what happens if things go wrong and who pays.
And I, Kim,
it's part of the indemnification point.
This is John Marshall. Can I take that one on? Judy, I think for one thing, it is you're kind of, the question is outside the scope of our presentation, which is on the environmental impacts. As to the indemnification question, like all of our permits, we have our standard indemnification clauses within our permits, so they'll be treated just like every other permittee. But that's and there are. There are rarely, and in particular with this permit and the anticipated effects, the chances of anything going wrong that would need to be indemnified for are very, very small because of the conclusions of the EIS. But, that is part of the permit conditions, which will go to the board and can be discussed at that level, but not here.
Well, thank you. That I didn't realize that there was a standard process for indemnification. So thank you, John. That's helpful.
Thank you, John. Judy, are you satisfied? Did you have other comments?
For now, yeah.
Okay. Great. Let me go to Ms. Chandler next then.
Hi, thank you very much. I'd just like to make a comment. I do live in Tahoe Keys. I've had a home here since 1992. I'd like to speak in favor of certifying the EIS. Since 2016, I've been on the Water Quality Committee, so I'm very much aware of the hard work that has gone into this proposal by many people. I've attended some stakeholder committees, and I can attest that this has been a very transparent process by which the problem has been looked at from many different angles. I think that the process of the stakeholders arrived at a scientifically sound test that will be able to give us a good idea as to what is the best way of working on this problem. And I certainly believe that the option of doing nothing is the worst that can possibly happen, and that we have to look at the science that's presented to us today. The risk of not doing the test is much greater than the risk of doing the test. Thank you.
Thank you, Susan. Appreciate that. Ms. Carr, would you like to go next?
I sure can. Thank you.
Okay.
And I'd like to thank everybody that's come before, both the questions and the presentation. They've reduced some of the questions and comments that I had on my list, so thank you for that. One item in related to the master response questions is that it was pointed out by some that not including an alternative, this is master response note related to master response number 11. Some folks thought that not including an alternative for filling in the keys was a deficiency in the EIS. And I can see why in the master response, it's not a deficiency, because we're trying to test various methods for weed removal. And if you fill in the keys, you can't do those tests. However, I presume that when we get to the next phase, years from now, now three, four, however many years from now, once these tests are over, that the potential for bringing that alternative back as a long-term solution could come back on the table. So folks that are interested in discussing that solution to the weeds problem in the Keys would potentially be satisfied at a different point down the road.
Hi,
and Kim, I just figured I'd handle my questions one at a time so you could field them to the right person.
I was going to call on John Marshall.
Jennifer, you are correct that it is not included it was excluded as a potential for the test project, which is before, which is what is the subject of the EIS. We know that filling in the keys would be an effective strategy for addressing the weeds. Of course, it has substantial other effects, which may preclude it from being considered a viable alternative in the future, but it is not, as a matter of course, precluded from that next step after this test, which would be to consider the long-term strategies to address weeds in the Keys.
Thanks, and I assume that would be true. I believe I know the answers to these questions, but I'm asking them. For other concerns about expanding these methods, the ones that are determined favorable, expanding them from a test scale to a full scale, again, it will be doing this all again, probably before I retire, on a long-term, large-scale solution to this. And other things like potential escape of chemicals outside the Keys, if it's the whole acreage of the entire Keys, all of those things will be evaluated down the road.
Yes, that's the purpose for the test project.
Yeah.
Okay. You allow
these technologies to be tested and then to see if what impacts, if any, they're going to have to inform the next decision.
Thank you. I do have a question about I'm in the table. I'm in the ES1 table. I'm on page 203. If anybody wants to follow along on AQU7, which is effects on fish movement that would block access to spawning habitat. It talks about there being no significant potential to block fish movements, but there was discussion about use of turbidity curtains to control the migration of various elements around the keys during the testing project. These turbidity curtains, I presume, would potentially prevent fish movement around, but is this less than significant because the timing of the test, like in the spring and early summer, is that different from the timing of spawning, or is there no spawning habitat in the keys to begin with?
Jim, you want to take that one?
The habitat and the use of the Tahoe Keys lagoons is so very limited by the aquatic weed problem in there that migration of fish and use by fish was not found to be significant for the overall populations. So where, you know, an individual fish or several individual fish might get impeded by a turbidity curtain, it would not have any significant impact on the fisheries community overall.
Thank you. I have another question more broadly about various discussions on native plant species and doing macrophyte surveys and everything to identify where these invasive species are versus the native plant species. And I just generally have a question about how the Keys, as a very non-native construction, could have native species. Are these species present in other streams in the basin? Plants generally aren't in the lake proper. So I mean, I understand that we're concerned about not impacting native species, but how did they become native to begin with in this environment? And why are they important as compared to the invasive species?
Go ahead, Jim.
Well, aquatic plants are an important element of the aquatic ecosystem. They provide habitat and cover for native fish. They are just an integral component of the ecosystem and all the aquatic biological life that lives there. And so we wouldn't want to do anything to eliminate all aquatic plants from the Tahoe Keys lagoons or any other part of Lake Tahoe. The native plants, in some cases are just as effective at spreading around and inhabiting suitable habitat as these aquatic invasive plants that we're battling. The native plants have been there since very soon after those lagoons were excavated. They just found their way in there naturally. And, it wasn't too long before the aggressive non-native plants came in and started to outcompete them. But what we'd like to, see if some of our weed control methods in this test are successful is that after knocking back the dominance of the invasives, that through spot treatments of invasives that bounce back
we could give the natives a chance to again become dominant in these areas.
So these are beneficial plants, like you said, that have been around for a while, but the invasives that I think I remember hearing once that it was presumed that, you know, somebody dumped a fish tank in and that's where like some of these plants came from. Those are the types of non-native species that just aren't natural to the basin.
Yeah, that's right. And, you know, in some cases, not even natural to this hemisphere.
As well as the giant goldfish. On the prior page, page 202 at the top, related to AQU3, it talks about there's no published evidence about endothel causing substantial adverse effects on, I think that was the, again, on the, I'm going to just read it. Although the drift of endothel from the treatment sites in Lake Tillac may contact water shield, it's about that water shield plant, there's no published evidence that it would cause substantial adverse effects. And I think that's good. I support, you know, the fact that you've done all that research. That's fantastic. I'm assuming, although there was no published evidence of past effects of endothel on water shield, I assume there's some sort of ongoing monitoring of the plant species during the project so that if we find that there's an effect of endothel on water shield, then, you know, it may be published as a result of this project. We're not just making certain assumptions merely because there's no historic or published evidence in the past. Does that make sense?
Go ahead, Jen.
Jim, I think you're muted.
Oh, sorry. Jim, I think at least the first part you could take. Can you hear me?
We cannot hear you, Jim. Are you muted?
Okay. There yeah, you go. I think I got it now. Sorry about that. Yes, yeah, so, you know, there would be these pre-treatment surveys to try to avoid the water shield. And adjust the boundaries of the test sites in Lake Tillac to avoid a direct hit on any, you know, good, strong, healthy stands of water shield. And then monitoring is required of the plant communities during and after treatments. So they would be back in, assessing the plants, and this would all be part of the information generated from the test to find out, you know, what effects there are on the water shield, as well as other effects on water quality and plant communities and benthic invertebrates, etc.
Thank you. All right, I've got one more question. And this is on issue WQ3 on page 190. Of the packet, and it says fragments may incidentally break off from aquatic plants during herbicide applications, ultraviolet light treatments, and placement of LFA systems and suction. Floating plant fragments may escape, causing nuisance and adversely affect beneficial uses. That totally makes sense, and I know that dispersal of fragments is a real problem in the no-action alternative. What surprised me was that the coding on significance before mitigation talks about the proposed project and action alternative one as having not applicable to this particular issue, where the description of the issue is that fragments may incidentally break off during applications of herbicides, light treatments, and LFA, yet the PP and AA1 both say NA. So that doesn't seem to be in alignment. Those two not being applicable doesn't seem to be in alignment with the issue itself.
J, Jim, do you want to start with that one? We could also have Lars Anderson maybe jump in on, since he's a plant, our local plant expert.
Yeah, certainly. I think that, you know, anytime you're operating boats, I'm hearing a lot of feedback there. Anytime you're operating boats as part of the project or otherwise, there's a chance of generating fragments. With the aquatic herbicide application, there would be some lines off of the boat that was doing the applications. I don't think that those would do much to cause fragments, you know, not nearly so much as the harvesting machines, of course. There's some fragments that are going to break off during use of the UV light array. For the capture of the fragments, of course, during the aquatic herbicide applications and for weeks thereafter, there would be these double turbidity curtains. And so I think fragments escaping out, you know, to the main lake would be prevented pretty thoroughly. Less so with the UV light. There would continue to be fragment control efforts that are used during harvesting now and would continue to be used during this project, but they don't get 100%. The exact, you know, reference and where the NA appeared in that table is something I would need to look at. So I guess in my response, I didn't respond so specifically to that as to just let you know what my understanding is of that potential impact.
Yeah, so it's certainly not a deal killer for me on the adequacy of the EIS. It just seems like if there is potential for there to be fragments generated before mitigation, that would either be potentially significant or less than significant, and then the mitigations that you described being included in the mitigation column. Again, because we're dealing with fragments already, I don't see that it adversely affects the ability to certify the EIS. I just wanted to note that and potentially have, I don't know if it would be amended or potentially have it addressed in a future version, or I don't know how that would work, but it just wasn't lining up for me.
Yeah, Jennifer, I see that. That's a great point. I think we can look at the appropriate denomination there, and maybe a less than significant is more appropriate than an NA for that particular issue. If you want to, we'll try to keep track of that. If you want to make that part of your motion down the line, if that's how you want to address it, then we can offer the recommendation that we can deal with that.
Thank you, John.
Thanks, Kat.
And I think that's it for me. Thank you, Brendan.
Thanks, Jennifer. Let's see. Steve Teixeira had to transfer to his phone. Steve, are you ready to go with your comment?
I believe so. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can. Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I always appreciate Jennifer's expertise. This is definitely her field. I did want to say that I know a number of us were on the Lahontan meeting last week. And I'm not a technical expert, but I've listened to many presentations from various experts on this important topic. And I thought the Lahontan board and the staff and DKPOA and the others who presented did an excellent job. And I'm very comfortable supporting the action before the APC today. I may not be around when the vote comes, but I wanted to let my colleagues know that I'm very supportive of moving forward with this. And I appreciated Joanne's framing of this at the beginning. This is a very, very serious issue that really affects all of the lake, and we need to move forward. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Steve. Okay, other APC members, who would like to go next? Okay, I'm not hearing any. I just have one or two quick comments. I know turbidity curtains are proposed for the mitigation for dredging, and I've heard them mentioned as probable mitigation for herbicide spread as well. I'm just wondering if the herbicides are soluble, are we just talking about herbicide residues, or has there been research done on how well turbidity curtains work at controlling herbicide expansion or migration, or is that part of the test where that will be monitored and then that can provide feedback should a full-scale project be needed?
Dennis, why don't you talk about the test design and turbidity curtains?
Sure. Again, Dennis Baglow, TRPA staff. Turbidity curtains are part of the proposed project for herbicide use. They were required in the Lahontan NPDES permit to be kept in place as long as herbicides and their degradants can be detected. And previous trials of the turbidity curtains using that rhodamine dye that Jim mentioned is used as a tracer to be able to monitor where herbicides go. They're, it's very readily detected, and previous use of that dye with double turbidity curtains, I think showed a 99% compliance or ability to keep those things within the test area.
Oh, wow. Okay. So it's really effective. Okay. Well, that's awesome that that's been looked at. I think that would be a question that the public may have. Great. I guess last call on APC member comments. Otherwise, I am going to open this up for public comment.
Yeah, Brendan, I do have one other question, probably for Scott. The Lahontan Board had, I think, four alternatives, and some of those appear still in what's before us in the EIR. But do you have any insight into where those other proposals are? Because one of them was an environmentally superior proposal that did not include the use of herbicides. But I believe that wasn't adopted. But what is the status of those proposals?
Again, if I could jump in there, Kim, Judy, both the EIS and the EIR is a joint document. Okay. And so there was all the same alternatives were examined in the document. And under CEQA, it's required to identify a environmentally superior alternative, but it's not required to adopt it if it doesn't achieve the purposes. So that was really the question for the Lahontan Board, and they unanimously chose to approve the proposed comprehensive test instead of what the environmental document identified under CEQA. So that was, again, the Lahontan job under CEQA. We have no obligation to identify that alternative. And I think the discussion in the staff report makes clear the basis for the staff recommendation for the certification, which again is not the selection of the ultimate merits, but just the certification of the document. And so that's really outside, again, our scope of identifying, you know, which of the proposed alternatives should be adopted as the actual test. Your job here is just to identify if the environmental document satisfies the requirements set forth in the compact and to make the appropriate findings set forth in Attachment A.
Thank you, John. Judy, does that satisfy your comment?
I'm still a little bit confused. So those are all those alternatives that were before the Lahontan Board do appear still in the EIRs. Is that what you're saying? But they just are there because of CEQA requirements?
No, what I'm saying is the EIR, EIS, it's a joint document. So the same alternatives, you know, the proposed project alternative, action alternative one, action alternative two, and the no project alternatives were all analyzed in the same document, which served both CEQA purposes and TRPA compact Article 7 purposes, which guides the environmental documentation requirements like CEQA for TRPA. So what your chore today is to look at that environmental document and to make certain that it is technically adequate and you can make the substantive findings that are set forth before you. One of those findings that the governing board is going to have to make is which project it wants to approve. The proposal that's being recommended by staff, or they have within their discretion to choose a modified project. But that is not the question before you. So the question that you have is, was there a reasonable range of alternatives, and were those alternatives analyzed appropriately? And that's it, not to make a proposal on the selection of which alternative to move forward. Hopefully that's...
So that's, just to go one more time here. So the TRPA board could do that, could choose another alternative, even though the Lahontan board did not.
Correct.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, thank you for that discussion. I'm going to move us now to public comment on this item. So once again, to participate in the meeting, go to trpa.gov. In the calendar, click on Advisory Planning Commission meeting January 18, 2022. There you'll find a link to the public webinar. If any member of the public wishes to address the Advisory Planning Commission, please use the hand-raising function now, and you'll be unmuted by a TRPA staff member. We will limit commenters to 3 minutes for individuals and 10 minutes for group representatives. So please indicate if you're commenting as an individual or for a group. And I will now turn this over to TRPA staff to control the public comment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Jesse Patterson, you're unmuted on my end. If you unmute yourself, you can address the commission.
All right. Good afternoon, Chairman, Commissioners. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can, Jesse.
All right. Thank you so much. I'm speaking on behalf of an organization, but I'll try to maintain 3 minutes. I'm Jesse Patterson, the Chief Strategy Officer for the League to Save Lake Tahoe, and thank you for the opportunity to speak to you today. The League's the largest and oldest organization focused on protection of water quality and clarity of Lake Tahoe. And for 65 years, we've had quite a bit of success in achieving that mission. Thanks in large part to partnerships with many of the staff we worked on and partners we worked on this project. We've never supported a project, program, or proposal that would threaten Lake Tahoe's water quality or clarity, and that's no different today. The Tahoe Keys has been a top priority for the League for almost a decade, as it poses one of the largest threats to Lake Tahoe's unique and delicate ecology, as you've heard today, and if left unsolved, could damage the lake we know and love forever. My comments today are to relay the League's strong support for the proposed project and recommendation to certify the EIS, and to provide some context on our involvement over the last decade and how that was incorporated into the project, as well as incorporated into the environmental analysis. I've personally participated in several iterations of Tahoe Keys related stakeholder committees over the last 9 years, including this most recent effort that led to the CMT proposal and associated final EIS in front of you. All of that involvement has been inclusive, transparent, and very responsive to input given by us and other partners. Since 2013, we've committed thousands of hours of staff time and technical expertise from our team, which consists of water quality, environmental policy, community engagement professionals, several with multiple graduate degrees in the field. We've also dedicated just over $200,000 in direct funding to support innovative pilot projects to address the challenge. which include non-chemical control method testing, aquatic weed containment projects, and additional scientific monitoring. In 2018, one of those projects was implementing the first ever bubble curtain used to help contain the spread of aquatic invasive weeds. We've continued to improve and monitor it over the last 3 years, and will do so throughout the control methods test 3-year testing if approved. We also funded the implementation of the largest laminar flow aeration project in Lake Tahoe at 5.9 acres in April of 2019, because we are curious about how that might affect nutrient sources providing growth to the plants. And that information was included and in the control methods test before you and in the environmental analysis. While all of these efforts have been helpful and show promise towards helping to control and contain the aquatic weed infestation, we've learned over the decade, and what's become incredibly clear, is that the currently tested methods are not enough alone, nor a long-term solution without additional tools in the toolbox. The control methods test was designed to help learn about those additional tools, which are effective in combination and in application, and the environmental analysis considered all of this information in a thorough and transparent way. So again, we strongly support the control methods test project, encourage this commission to recommend certification of the final EIS. We share many of the questions that these commissioners have relayed today, including what's next, but pragmatically, we need to move through this very safe, very science-based test to learn more before we assess what's next. But of course, we're very, very interested in what comes out of the test and how to apply something long-term. So again, scientifically based, poses no significant threat to Lake Tahoe. In fact, the no action is the worst thing that could happen to Lake Tahoe. Stakeholders' input was incorporated. It's a very thorough document, including revisions by a review by the Tahoe Science Advisory Council and other third parties. Encourage you to certify the test. We're running out of time, and Lake Tahoe is too important not to continue to explore a solution. Thank you for your time.
Thanks, Jesse.
Next hand raise is David Blau. David, if you unmute on your end, you can address the commission.
Oh, can you hear me now? Hello?
Yes, we can, David. Yes, go ahead. Can?
Okay, I'm also speaking on behalf of the League to Save Lake Tahoe, so I would request at least 4 minutes if I could, maybe a little longer. Is that okay? Jesse took a lot less than his full allotment there, so. All right? Okay. Well, I want to thank you for the time to address the commission this morning. I'm a homeowner with a family of 34 years on the West Shore at Rubicon Bay. I'm a board member of the league as well as program chair. And I have 38 years experience preparing CEQA and NEPA documents, including combined state-federal documents. I probably prepared and directed the preparation of over 150 of these types of documents. And the decision before you today is really, as John Marshall explained, it's the adequacy of the EIR. It's not so much what you might like or not like about a certain aspect of a component, but the adequacy of the EIR as a full disclosure document. The league mission is to protect water quality and clarity, and we cannot do this if we don't clean up the Keys. The lake health and the ecological health of the Keys are inseparable. And it's been hard to get a lot of folks to accept that. They want to focus totally on the debate within the Keys, and it's inseparable from the health of the lake. So I want to focus with my expertise on the adequacy of the EIS. It's extremely thorough. It's legally defensible. It's science-based. It's one of the most complete and comprehensive EISs that I've ever seen. And I doubt if you could ever find this much work being done on a testing program in any environmental document. We're especially appreciative of the no action alternative that has been treated as a distinct alternative all the way through. In most EISs, it's dismissed in one or two pages. In this case, it was treated thoroughly under every technical topic throughout the document. And not surprising, the conclusion was the no action alternative is the most adverse and the most harmful to the lake. So we support the proposed project as it's being stated. The three tools that are featured in Category A, backed up by use of Category B tools. All three of those Category A tools need to be tested separately as well as in combination, as was shown on Dennis's earlier slide. UV light and laminar aeration, flow aeration, have promise, but both, let's be realistic, both have serious limitations. They're speculative, and they're not likely to achieve a goal of 75% knockback of the biomass in the Keys. The two herbicides that are proposed for use have been in use for almost 50 years. They're EPA approved. There's never been any residual effects found, even where they're used in lakes where there's drinking water supply taking out. The herbicide test will be done only in the first year of the 3 years in the spring. We talked about the double turbidity curtain, the heavy monitoring that will go on. The dosage is less than half of what EPA would allow. All these things are protective devices. So the bottom line, the key EIS finding is no significant impact to environmental health, water quality, or aquatic biology. That was your environmental consultant's finding as expressed by Jim Good. And that was your own staff finding, both staffs, in fact, TRPA and Lahontan. Lahontan staff went beyond that and said that the controlled methods test satisfies all applicable exemption criteria. It's been peer reviewed by the Science Advisory Council, and granting an exception will not result in any degradation. Finally, there's been lots of misinformation and misconceptions floating around for years relative to this project. And I'd like to just take some of those on individually, three of them. Number one, herbicides would be required every year after the test. That is absolutely false. The hope is that one comprehensive application will knock back the weeds by 75% or close to it, and then other tools can be used for spot treatment and maintenance year after year. So to scare people in saying that herbicides will be used every year forevermore is just not fair or right. Number two, using herbicides would open the floodgates for use all over the lake. That also is absolutely not true. Every use of herbicide would require a separate and distinct exemption.
Sorry about the delay there. Logistical difficulties today.
Exemption from Lahontan and an EIR to back that up.
If I could just interrupt for a second, could you all please mute? We're getting some feedback someplace. If you could all mute if you're not speaking. Thank you.
All right. And three, we haven't exhaustively tested all methods. Well, I would submit that 12 years of study, 5 years of environmental analysis, millions of dollars and thousands of hours would qualify as exhaustive. There is no silver bullet here in terms of one dream solution. So we cannot ignore the lake and focus the entire debate on the Keys. We need to test all tools now, and we need to find a science-based long-term solution. And I would just like to point out how unique this EIS is in three ways. Number one, I have never seen anywhere where an EIS, a full EIS EIR has been used for a testing program. That alone is extremely unique. Two, I've never seen the no action treated as a distinct alternative. And three, I've never seen this level of mitigation, monitoring, and protection layer upon layer to ensure that there is no harm done to the lake itself. So that's my remarks. I'm happy to take questions. Thank you.
Thanks for those thorough comments, David. Appreciate it.
Next hand up is Robert Larson. Robert, you can go ahead and address the commission.
Hello, can you hear me okay?
Yes, we can, Bob. Go ahead.
Excellent. Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the commission. My name is Bob Larson, and I serve as the program officer for the Tahoe Science Advisory Council. It's great to see so many familiar faces and be a part of this meeting again. It's been a while. This is an extraordinarily complex and important issue before you this morning, as has been mentioned. Several folks have commented that a team from the Tahoe Science Advisory Council reviewed the draft environmental document. They provided comments in January of last year. As noted, the reviewers found the document to be a thorough, comprehensive analysis of the proposed aquatic invasive plant control methods test project. I'd just like to read a summary of the conclusions from their submitted memorandum. Dr. Sudeep Chandra and Alex Forrest conclude that the Tahoe Keys Aquatic Weed Control Methods Test Draft EIR-EIS as a whole has thoroughly considered the important and urgent need for controlling aquatic invasive plants in the Tahoe Keys. Various approaches and alternatives for plant control in this situation and their potential impacts have been well-researched and presented in a logical way. The document is well-written, transparent in its findings, and includes sufficient data analyses to proceed with the projects that seek to control plants. Based on this work, sustainable solutions should be developed before the situation worsens in both the Keys and then the broader body of Lake Tahoe. So I just want to say again that this has been an extraordinarily thorough and complicated document, and it has been assessed by a number of professionals and experts in the field, including the scientist I referenced with the Science Advisory Council. So on behalf of the council, I want to encourage the APC to recommend the TRPA Governing Board certify the control methods test EIR-EIS and advance this important project. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Bob. Good to hear from you.
Mr. Chair, there are no other hands raised to comment on this item.
Okay. I am surprised, but I will respect that decision of the public for engagement. So I will close the public comment period. And I'm going to go back to APC members. Any final thoughts, comments, questions based on what we heard or other things that have come into your mind?
Mr. Chair, this is Jennifer Carr. I just have one really super quick thing. And Bob, his comments reminded me that I meant to mention it earlier. I'm very pleased that this project did go through the Tahoe Science Advisory Council because that's what the council is there for. And getting that independent sort of peer review of this very important document, I think, was the right move. And I appreciate the letter that was issued back in January of 2001, giving us that information. That certainly did help me in my decision making. So thank you.
I agree. That was nice to have their review and the letter they wrote us. That was nice. Other members? Okay.
Brendan, if I may, it's Ellery. Thanks. So I just wanted to pick up on one of the public comments that was made previously. I also very much appreciated the review of the no project alternative and found it to be pretty remarkable that the no project alternative was found to be the least environmentally beneficial. Usually it's the opposite in an environmental review. And so I think I just wanted to mention that and also how remarkable I found it that in the analysis, all
potential impacts that were evaluated were found to be less than significant. I would have expected some significant impacts and maybe a statement of overriding considerations, but here we have such care taken with the mitigation measures that were included that all potential impacts were found to be less than significant. So I think I just wanted to recognize the care, the effort that went into this analysis and the collaboration as well.
Thanks, Ellery. Agree. It's exceptional. So it's fantastic for our decision-making process. Final thoughts from anyone else? Okay, hearing none, we have two motions to make on this item. And would any APC member care to entertain the first motion?
Mr. Chair,
Sorry, Jennifer, did you want to jump in before we go to motions?
I was just going to offer to make the motion because I sort of inserted a wrinkle with issue WQ3.
So. Okay. Susan, is that okay with you?
Fine, no problem.
Okay. Go ahead, Jennifer.
All right. So I would make a motion to recommend the governing board certify the final EIS as technically adequate as set forth in attachment A, with TRPA's consideration of updating table ES1 for issue WQ3 to identify in the proposed project and action alternative 1 the potential significance before mitigation and include mitigation actions in the table.
Okay. Thank you. Hopefully, John Marshall, does that make sense for staff, that motion?
It does.
Okay, great. Anyone care to second?
I'm sorry, this is Jim Good. I just wanted to offer one clarification on that. And that is that I think what's in error there is that where the table says NA, both before mitigation and after mitigation, it should be LTS, which stands for less than significant. And so when we have an issue that is determined to be less than significant before mitigation, then no mitigation measures need be included for that issue or in this table.
Okay, Jim, okay. Are you suggesting that no amendment is needed and it is properly written?
No, I think what he's suggesting is that it should be identified as less than significant, since it was less than significant before mitigation, although Jennifer, what you'll see is there's, I think off to the right-hand column, there is project elements that are identified that address that issue. But what I took Jennifer's motion to be in the inclusion is that to direct staff to look specifically at that determination as it is now and to make certain that it's the appropriate designation. And I think what you've heard from Jim is that it really should have been a less than significant determination and not a not applicable determination. So I think the motion is fine as drafted because it doesn't direct a particular outcome. It directs us to look at that particular issue and take into consideration Jennifer's comments.
Okay. Thank you, John, for clarifying. Anyone care to second that motion?
Second.
Was that you, Ellery?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. All right, Tracy, we have a motion and a second. Could you please help me with a roll call vote on motion number one?
Ms. Chandler?
Yes.
Mr. Oling?
Yes.
Ms. Carr?
Yes.
Mr. Drake?
Yes.
Mr. Drew?
Yes.
Mr. Gavon? Mr. Gavon? I'll come back. Ms. Jacobson?
Yes.
Accordingly, based on what kind of building they
Ms.
live
Simon?
In.
Ms. Simon?
Gavon's, yes.
See what you're saying.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Gavon. Ms. Simon?
Judy, you're muted.
Sorry. Sorry, I abstain.
Mr. Overwood? Mr. Hitchcock?
Yes.
Thank you. Ms. Stella?
Yes.
Mr. Young?
Yes.
And Mr. Ferry?
Yes.
Mr. Chair, that motion passes.
Thank you, Tracy. Would anyone care to take the second motion? Susan, would you like to do that one?
Sure, I'll do that one. Thank you very much. I've moved to recommend the Governing Board make the Compact Article 7 findings for the final EIS as set forth in Attachment A.
Thank you. Do I have a second?
Mr. Chair, I'll second. This is Garth.
Thank you, Garth. Great. Okay, we have a motion and a second. No further discussion. Tracy, could you help with a roll call vote on motion number 2?
Mr. Young? Mr. Young?
Yes.
Thank you. Mr. Hitchcock?
Yes.
Ms. Stella?
Yes.
Ms. Simon?
Abstain.
Ms. Jacobson?
Yes.
Mr. Drew?
Yes.
Mr. Gavon?
We need to launch a council.
Yes.
If you live in.
Ms. Carr?
Yes.
Mr. Drake?
Yes.
Ms. Chandler?
Yes.
Mr. Oling?
Yes.
Mr. Ferry?
Yes.
Mr. Chair, that motion also passes.
Thank you, Tracy. Okay, that concludes item 5B. Thank you again to everyone that's been involved. That was incredibly thorough, productive discussion. I know it's been a long process, and it will go to the Governing Board for final consideration next week on the 26th. So let's move along in our agenda. We've gotten through the meat of it here, but we are on to item 6, which is reports, and I'm going to pass this over to Mr. Hester for the Executive Director report, including upcoming topics.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The only topics that I have to cover are upcoming topics. We have a long list. We'll try to cover them real quickly. The Bijou Al Tajo Community Plan, we're looking for an amendment to come forward on that. An amendment on treatment of slopes between 30 and 50% for vegetation treatments. An AIS program update, a threshold update briefing, and we don't have quite scheduled yet, but a series of code amendments dealing with climate change. So those are the upcoming items, and that concludes my report, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, John. I will go to the other John for the general council status report.
Just one item, and I'd like to thank very much, you know, both Judy for consulting me and Susan and Steve for making comments at the Lahont meeting. We had a very good discussion, Judy and I did, regarding your various roles as APC members and when you want to be an advocate, what that means to maintain your ability to vote and participate on items that come before you. So I just wanted to express that thanks and to extend, you know, an invitation to anybody who's might be in that circumstance to give me a call and we can walk through issues that might arise from the fact that you are APC members when an item is being heard by another agency that will come before you in some fashion. So thank you very much, and that's it.
Thanks, John. Appreciate your counsel. Okay, on to APC member reports. I'm going to go down my list and start with Mr. Alling.
Nothing at this point. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thanks, Garth. I believe Mr. Booth is out. So next would be Ms. Chandler.
Nothing to report, but I just want to thank everybody for allowing this motion to go forward. It's been a long haul.
Thanks, Susan. Mr. Drake.
Nothing this month. Thank you.
Thanks, Kevin. Mr. Drew?
No update, Mr. Chair. Thanks.
Thanks, Jason. Mr. Gavon?
I don't know if you guys saw our stuff just recently, but we had a pretty significant, that last storm came through and just wreaked havoc on our fire boat. And we're really working to get that public safety pier. It looks like it may have totaled our fire boat completely. So we are working to figure out a way around that, get a replacement boat. And yeah, it was really pretty catastrophic for us. So that being said, we're still looking for support on that item and getting that pier, public safety pier built. That's what's going on in our world. Pretty quiet New Year's Eve. And we didn't have quite the crowds here, but the casinos have been reporting good and solid numbers up here, so that's all good for us on our side of things. Yeah, that's what's going on with the fire service right now.
Thank you, Eric. Yeah, really sorry to read about your boat. It's terrible. Mr. Hill, I believe, is out, so I'll go to Ms. Jacobson.
Yeah, hi. Thanks, Brendan. Just a couple things really quick. In December, our board adopted a transportation fee update, which includes projects that will are aimed at reducing VMT. So that was adopted in December. And then I also wanted to mention that our board also held a workshop in December on the short-term rental ordinance and potential updates to that. And so we are moving forward on January 25th with an ordinance update. That includes a numerical cap on STRs for the Tahoe Region of Placer County, which the inventory or the cap includes an inventory plus a small expansion capacity. That's the direction we received from our board. It also includes a minimum night stay requirement, eliminating any exemptions, so all residential uses would be subject to the ordinance, and then we are increasing our penalty structure and fines. So that's it for me. Thanks.
Thanks, Crystal. Good update. Mr. Letton, I saw you joined. Would you like to provide an update?
Sure. Thank you, Board Chair. I'm not sure if there was previous someone from Lahontan spoke earlier in the hearing or not, but clearly if you missed it, we had a pretty, historic, you know, board meeting last week and the adoption of our MPDS permit for the Tahoe Keys Weed Project, along with the Basin Plan Prohibition Exemption certification of the environmental document and the MMRP. So that was the big news last week for us. That is just a monumentous effort on the part of multiple agencies in the basin, including our staff. And it was the meeting was incredibly attended by the public. We had almost 84 attendees at one point. Close to 50 people spoke during public comment, both supporting and those not in support of the project. Really appreciated the public's input on that. And so it's a huge step forward. I'm pleased, even though I missed the vote just now, I'm pleased to see that the recommendation is moved forward to TRPA at that point. And that's really all I had to update.
Thanks, Ben. Appreciate it. Mr. Hitchcock.
Thank you, Chairman Ferry. Just a few things. We have a night city council meeting tonight. They're going to be considering the Bijou Tahoe Community Plan Amendment. That's to facilitate development and construction of the new rec center. They're also going to be considering the initial study of mitigated neg debt for the 56-acre master plan. And also considering a tiny home on wheels in residential neighborhood, in residential zones. And that's it.
Nice. Thanks, John. Ms. Simon?
No report.
Thank you, Judy. Ms. Dollar?
No report for me. Thank you.
Thanks, Ellery. I believe Mr. Teixeira has left. Is that right, Steve? You're not there? Okay. Mr. Young? Anything to share, Eric? We may have lost Mr. Young as well. I'll go back to Vice Chair Carr.
Nothing today, thank you.
All right, that leaves me very quickly. John just mentioned it, but the city and the county have reached consensus on an agreement for the 56-acre project in town. So that agreement will be going to the city council tonight, and we'll be going to our board the following Tuesday, which is January 25th. So we're excited about that. Last week, our board did adopt Myers area plan amendments to include accessory dwelling units. So that is now complete. And also next Tuesday, we're having a housing workshop at our board. And Tahoe will be included in that discussion. Just wanted to mention those things. And that concludes APC member reports. We're on to our last item, which is public interest comments. This is item 7 on the agenda. So members of the public participating in our virtual meeting via GoToWebinar could raise their hand now to indicate they wish to speak, and they'll be unmuted by TRPA staff. As a reminder, comments should be as brief and concise as possible. Let's see. Written comments received prior to the meeting were forwarded to APC members. I do reserve the right to limit the comment duration. Any unheard comments can be submitted via email to tcampbell@trpa.gov, and they'll be forwarded to all APC members. Please note the APC is prohibited by law from taking immediate action on or discussing issues raised by the public that are not listed on the agenda. Catherine, I will turn it over to you to monitor hands raised.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. There are no hands raised to comment on this item.
Okay. Thank you, Catherine. That leaves us with item 8, which is adjournment. Thank you all for a productive meeting today. Do I have a motion to adjourn?
So moved. Eric Young.
Thank you, Eric. All those in favor, please say aye.
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 Aye. Aye. Aye.
Thank you all. We will stand adjourned at 12:47. Thank you again. Please enjoy your afternoon and stay safe.